We're on a mission from God.
Yours, mine, and theirs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, the fourth greatest movie podcast on the internet, where we prove that democracy only works for picking movies to watch. So here we are. My name is Roy. My dad was geysered. I just got out of jail, so I could really use a foot massage.
Wait, democracy doesn't work with the movie. What are you talking? Okay, fine. Yellow, I'm John. I just read over my show notes, and now I'm feeling blue.
I'm Melissa Martinez, and yeah, I was going to say I have the blues, but, you know, he already ruined it, so.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to say, I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
Yeah, it sort of feels like that. I'm like, what the hell am I doing up on a Saturday morning doing this?
Yeah.
That's true. That's how I feel. That's how I feel every Saturday morning when we have to do this, and also every Thursday evening when we do this.
Right? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I never feel right.
I apologize for the occasional Saturday morning, but I think it more than makes up for my frequent Thursday nights where I'm up until like 1 o'clock in the morning and have to wake up at 5. So I don't feel super bad about this.
Well,
morning.
Move to a normal time zone.
Oh, by the
way, what time zone are you in?
Eastern.
You're not in Utah?
No, I'm in Virginia.
Oh, I used to live in Virginia. What part?
Currently in Manassas. So okay. Basically DC suburbs.
Oh, okay, so you're with the rich folk. Okay. I was down closer to like Newport News, that area.
Oh, we just moved from Yorktown. We lived in Yorktown for several years.
Oh, okay. I know Yorktown. Oh,
I've been to the Newport News airport.
John's been to the Newport.
I've never been to that airport. Who flies out of there? It's so expensive.
It is. It's weird because like occasionally a Delta flight out of there will be cheaper or as cheap as Norfolk. John, I thought you flew in and out of Norfolk.
Oh, you're right. You pick me up. You would know. I don't know.
Anyway, we had a wedding. It was the best gay wedding I've ever been to, and John came, so it was great.
So it was even gayer.
Yeah.
Yep. A lot of celebration.
The movies that Melissa was subjected to is primary color movies, so yellow, blue, and red. Blue, the Blues Brothers.
The irony of which is the yellow one is in black and white.
Yeah, and we have an award for the most colorful movie, and it's not Yellowstone. But Yellowstone, 1936, I'm just happy that they spoke, that it wasn't a subtitled movie. So we got Yellowstone, which, to be honest, our choices for yellow movies was very limited. No one makes movies with the color yellow in the title. Blues Brothers. I'm glad
to.
What's that?
They're afraid to.
Yeah.
Couldn't we have gone with like Old Yeller? I mean, it's the same thing.
Yes, we could have gone with Old Yeller. And John chose Yellowstone. So.
My fault.
Ah, John.
Yeah, sorry.
I think John was hoping to watch Old Yeller for Tommy Kirk movies, which was never going to happen. So.
Oh, we'll get to that later. Tommy Kirk. Justice for Tommy Kirk, everybody. We'll get to that later.
Okay, maybe in a year Tommy Kirk will show up in our losers club, so who knows. Yeah, Blues Brothers, and then Raise the Red Lantern, which was my choice, and there's actually a ton of good choices for red movies, but we decided to watch a Chinese film that is a romp of a comedy about 1920s sexual politics, so...
I did not hear them utter the word red once in the entire movie.
Is that true? Did they never use the word red?
They use the Chinese word for red, but they're not uttering the word red.
That's the same thing.
John.
I don't think they ever said...
Not everything's for you, American, okay?
I don't think they ever said raise the red lantern.
I don't think they did.
I don't think they ever quoted that, right?
I wasn't watching for that. I don't think, yeah.
Yeah.
So, zero stars there.
No one in this movie was bitten by a radioactive lantern.
No one was.
So, sorry, we 100% just stole that joke from Caitlin Durante, who was a previous guest on this podcast. But she doesn't listen to this, so it doesn't matter.
She definitely does not.
No. All right, okay. John, we have a voicemail, which is astonishing.
It's astonishing. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and push the play button now.
Bloop. Hey, folks. It's your boy, Andy. How y'all doing? Thanks for reminding me to leave y'all a message. I am just so excited about the movies that y'all are going to be watching because I know what Brooke has in store, and I'm so excited for all of you. I'm really excited for her that she gets to dig into some of these. It's going to be great. Blues Brothers. Like, this is just like one of the top, like, 10 comedies of all time. It's great. Amazing work by Carrie Fisher, who is always great. Raise the Red Lantern, obviously, like, anytime we get to talk about the goddamn patriarchy in, you know, another setting, and it's classy. It's a foreign film, but we get to talk about the goddamn patriarchy. Kind of fun. Reminds me a lot of Utah and polygamy and all its problems. Anyway, thanks, y'all. Everybody watch Brooks movies. Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, so anyway, yeah, that was from that Andy's voicemail, curiously quiet about the movie Yellowstone.
Oh yeah, I know. Didn't say anything, even though that was the free movie, right?
Yeah. That was the free. Everybody can watch this movie Yellowstone. Andy did not.
And I talked about Yellowstone. Yeah, like him and I privately. He thought Kevin Costner was great in it.
Oh, okay. This is going to make our discussion in a few minutes a little interesting. So.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. Andy also mentioned Brooks movies. That Brooks movies are coming up in 2 weeks, next podcast. And so that's a bit of a teaser for her choice of movies that we're going to discuss at the end of the podcast. Because she's the next guest. Mm-hmm. Also, Brooke, a regular on Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye, as Yay! Melissa is. So, yeah, this is the crossover season of podcasts right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'll be on my best behavior compared to there, I promise.
You
cuss a lot on that one, and we talk about whale dongs, and I won't do that here.
When was the whale dong conversation?
It was a Little Mermaid.
Was it Little Mermaid? No, which one was it?
Yeah, it was.
It started with the Little Mermaid, and it sort of carried over a couple times.
Oh, I repressed that.
Well, they recorded two versions of the Little Mermaid podcast, the not suitable for work version, and then the version that you and I were on, John.
Oh, okay. Yeah, usually when I listen, I mostly listen for my own name or myself talking, I guess. Because I do remember listening to both of those. Yeah, no, okay, this is coming back to me. Whale dongs, writing it down now in my diary, re-listen to.
Okay.
Period. Okay, there we go.
All right, well, are you guys ready to talk about some colorful movies, starting with Yellowstone?
How ironic.
Indeed, yes. Okay. All right, so I've got Yellowstone, so we're going to dig into this synopsis real quick. This is a short movie, by the way, only barely an hour long.
That was a big reason for my picking it.
You're like, there are no good yellow movies, but at least there's a short one.
There's a short one.
So Yellowstone is all about Ranger Dick and his romancing of Ruth. And then also the B-plot of this movie is... what's his name? Andy Devine plays is, I want to say Lucky Day, but that ain't it. Payday. Andy Devine playing Payday. And so the B plot 15-year-old
is 15-year-old Andy Devine still talking like Friar Tuck, like way back when.
Can't wait to be a ranger.
Yeah. So yeah. This movie is essentially about what it takes to become a ranger with a badge. And then, you know,
because once you get that badge, any woman who enters the park of Yellowstone
has to follow the rules
for the taking. Yeah.
Yeah. And many of the rules are they have to kiss you and date you and stuff. But Andy Devine, if you look up his IMDb, that guy's been in like 7,000 movies.
Yeah. They need him. He's one of a kind, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, you have Ruth who's waiting to meet her dad in Yellowstone. She hasn't seen him in like 15 years because he's been in Australia. Well, that's a lie. He's getting out of the clink. So what we learn is previously a bunch
Australia is code for criminal.
Yes, it is.
Which is funny because it actually started as a penal colony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For England. Yeah. So, yeah.
As we all know, Australia is entirely populated by criminals. Yeah. I always think of that line.
Yes. So they can't be trusted. So what we learn is there were some criminals who robbed a bunch of banks and they hid their money in Yellowstone. Now, why they traveled from their banks to Yellowstone just to hide the money, I don't know, but they did. We also learned that Ruth, by the way, is coming to Yellowstone via, she went to Zion's and, oh, was it Arches?
Bryce, I believe.
She said Bryce. Good choice. Bryce is better than Arches. So good for her. She's hitting up all the national parks. And in 1936, there were three. So she's now completed all of them with Yellowstone. Her dad is out of prison. They're reunited, and he is watching his tail because everyone wants to kill him. There's a scene where he's having a meal in the Yellowstone Lodge, which, by the way, I've stayed in the Yellowstone Lodge. It's lovely. Not the Yellowstone Lodge, the Old Faithful Lodge. And as you look around the dining room, like every single guest there gives him the I'm hoping to murder you eye. And so his name is Foster. And he's there because he wants to dig up the money that they stashed away. But there's also the son of one of the other bank robbers is there because he wants his cut as well. Late one night, he leaves on a horse and Ranger Dick tries to stop him. But he's unsuccessful and we don't see him. But the good news is Jim Thorpe comes along and tells us that old Bessie is going to erupt for the first time in 50 years. That's terrible timing, but it is. It's going to erupt. And so they all go to check it out. And when it's done erupting, they find Mr. Foster's dead body. Now, I assume we didn't see this because they didn't have the budget for it, but I assume that his body spewed up with the geyser, like it got spit out of the geyser.
Yeah, that's what I imagined. Like, he went airborne.
Yeah, how come they didn't show that with some really old bad stop motion or something? I don't know. That could have been great. So he got spewed out of a scalding hot geyser, and they found him, and he was frozen to death. Anyway, the bad guys go looking for the gold, and Ranger Dick and Ruth are on their tail. And I think we also have a detective. Is it Hardigan? Hardigan's there.
Yes, Hardigan is the name.
Yeah. And he's the worst detective. If you're being interviewed by him, then he assumes you 100% did it, and he's ready to convict everybody. But he's just not very good at his job. But it turns out that he also has ulterior motives. So Ranger Dick and Ruth, they go down, and they find behind a waterfall, you're inside the geyser now. And they find all of the money bags. And they also find someone's been flash frozen. One of the guys who's gone to look for the money has been flash frozen. Can you guys explain this to me? Are any of you chemists where you're like, yes, geyser chemicals will flash freeze you even though it's 150 degrees down there?
Well, no, they talk about this.
Like the geyser,
there are hot water geysers and cold water geysers. But they're different ones.
This is a cold water geyser?
Yeah.
Are you being serious?
Yeah.
That's the way I understood it, too.
But is that a real thing? Because I thought the whole point of Yellowstone geysers is Yellowstone is basically the world's largest dormant volcano, and all the geysers, they spew because it's superheated water.
I don't know if that's – I assume that there have to be some – that these cold water geysers, they're the only things keeping the volcano in check, I'm guessing.
Okay.
Or maybe they were transplanted from a cold place. They're Iceland geysers that were transplanted from Yellowstone. That's my extreme theory.
Okay.
I'm going to look it up.
I'm not a fan of cold water geysers, but they exist. I don't think there's one in Yellowstone, though.
A pool, like a water pool in nature can be both hot and cold, believe it or not. It can run both. Nature is funny that way. So I don't pretend to know all the science behind it, but I know that both do exist sometimes often in the same pool.
That's crazy. Anyway, so the point is they go down there and they find the money, and who's right behind them? Hardigan. And Hardigan's got the drop on him, but guess what? Hardigan didn't figure on getting flash frozen, so Dick and Ruth escape. I don't remember if they leave with the money or not. That doesn't seem...
I love how the geyser just freezes everybody.
I know. But is there like, do you have to get too close to it or something? Like, because they blinked and all of a sudden he was frozen. They don't really explain it.
It's pretty much, they're all wandering into the Cloud City, like, carbon freezing chamber.
Yeah. I was going to say they didn't have the budget for carbonite, so that's why...
Oh, but anyway, I can't remember if Dick and Ruth leave with the money or not. I do remember that the cave is, I mean, it looks pretty decent, but they bump one of the stalactites at one point and it wiggles. So it's like the Batman and Robin sets. It's all wiggly. Well, what we do learn at the end is the ranger and Ruth, they're probably going to live happily ever after in Yellowstone, obeying all the rules in the handbook. And poor Payday, who finally got his badge, lost it. And rule number 17 in the book is if you lose your badge, you're no longer a ranger, and you got to start all over again. So
yeah. He deserved it because he was kind of harassing that Chinese cook.
Yeah. And I don't understand exactly why, what he did to earn his badge. Like, is it just a time thing? Like, did he do something special? I don't know.
Yeah, it looked like a timing thing.
Because, like, when am I going to earn my badge? I'm trying to earn my badge. And then he got it, and maybe they're like, maybe he'll shut up.
You have to spend a total of 40 days on horseback is kind of what they were implying. He, like, had a stopwatch.
I think They gave him a fake badge as a joke and didn't tell him. So I will say this movie features a Native American character and a Chinese character who are played by a Native American and a Chinese person. So for 1936, that's I don't know. That's pretty decent, right? Usually these characters are just played by white people who – put on really bad face paint, and I was terrified for a moment that we might get a nice blackface performance at the midnight show, because they're like they're in Yellowstone and they're having like the midnight jamboree and they're singing songs about, you know, good old days of Dixie, because Montana and Wyoming, as we all know, were deep South states during the Civil War.
It is funny because this is the first like pre-1950 movie we've watched on this podcast in a long time that didn't have a minstrel show in the middle of it, weirdly enough.
Oh, man. That's probably why it didn't do well. Not nearly enough blackface in this movie.
Yeah. Not enough racism.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, it's just kind of weird. Okay, this has nothing to do with this movie, but I just get the impression that going out and seeing a show was a minstrel show in the year 1930.
Yeah.
Like every time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird.
So what I do like about this movie is I like that the plot marries up pretty well with the poster, because the poster says this is the Great Geyser Murder Mystery, and the geyser really murdered everybody.
Yeah, the geyser killed everybody.
Now, Ross, however, had blunt force trauma to the head, a bullet to the spine, and he was geysered to death. So it was kind of like Murder on the Orient Express, but with two bad guys in a geyser.
I wasn't sure about this. Didn't the autopsy say it's like, yes, he was hit in the head, yes, he was shot in the back, but the real cause of death was geyser.
Geyser, yeah.
And so survivable. I think it's kind of funny because I can imagine like someone coming towards you or is like, I gotta kill this guy. But if you come across someone who's been geysered, you still need to hit them in the head and shoot them in the back.
Just to make sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. I don't really have much else to talk about with this movie other than the dinner looked really good.
The dinner looked good. I really appreciated that all the tourists who come to go see Old Faithful, they were all in ties and gowns.
Oh, yeah.
That seems very crazy to me. But you know, hey, to each his own. I don't know. Did people like sleep in ties and gowns back then?
I feel like there was an era, because when we do watch older movies, like I'm going to the grocery store in my 3-piece suit, right? And I think there was just that era, and I think it probably ended somewhere in the early 50s, where you no longer wore your suit and hat to everything you went to, even if it was just, you know, sitting around the campfire and singing songs about the South will rise again or whatever, right?
Right. That seems weird. I suppose, like, back then, every piece of clothing you had was not a t-shirt that you pulled over your head. Every piece of clothing was something you buttoned.
You had to button.
All the way up and down, yeah.
What a nightmare.
Like, even your pajamas and everything, yeah.
So I kind of like it. I'm kind of a fan of, like, dressing more formally, and I don't know. And people are welcome to be comfortable. And I have gone to the movie theater in basically pajamas before, so I can't point any fingers.
Men can say that because they don't have dresses that zip in the back that you cannot do unless another human being helps you.
Oh yeah.
So, do you understand what I'm saying? You don't have jeans, or not jeans, but pants without pockets. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, you don't mind formal wear because you still have comforts and ease of putting on your clothes with your formal wear.
I can put it on myself.
Women do not have that luxury. Also, you don't have to wear high heels, so you. Oh, sorry. I'm not supposed to cuss. Sorry.
That's another thing. That's another thing we need to work out with society. It seems like it wouldn't be too difficult, you know, to design like a dress that you don't have to do that, and a dress with like deep pockets and stuff.
More and more we're getting dresses with pockets.
Yeah.
The whole part about the zipper in the back, that's still on a lot of dresses. Yeah. Some of them zip on the side now, but it's still really hard to do. And I live by myself, y'all. So I'm just like, I'm not going to buy a dress. You know what I'm saying? That, like, you know, that I can't take on and off on my own. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I'll say right now, from now on, I'm only going to buy dresses that zip on the side.
You know? Well, no, I will say
I want to change this.
So my wife has bought a few new dresses recently, and actually they're 1950s style because I just think they're so pretty. But the last one we got had a zipper on the side, and I think it's much appreciated.
Yes.
Yeah. So I understand your pain, ma'am. Yes, I can put on all my clothes myself.
Also a gun holster on the inside. Also a gun holster. Just like a little, just, yeah.
Not
like
the, a little
place. We have that in Texas here.
Yeah. Really.
So, they have purses with a gun holster underneath. It's hidden. So you can, it's called concealed carry.
Yeah.
But K-A-R-I, it's so stupid.
Oh, carry.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's cute. Not that we need to be more European, but the last time I traveled with my kids to Europe, I remember reading an article that was basically like, hey, Americans, you know, this is, you know, please don't dress like Americans when you come here. And it's whatever. But one of the comments was, when you're getting ready to leave for the day, look in the mirror. Could you comfortably sleep in what you're wearing? Go change your clothes. So anyway. It was a different day where everyone wore suits and we loved blackface. And so, changes have been made for the better for everybody. I will say with high heels, I don't understand it. I really don't. And my wife has a couple pairs, but if she never wanted to wear high heels again for the rest of her life, I really don't care. Cause she doesn't need to be taller, and I think her calves look just wonderful regardless. But I don't know. I mean, those were definitely had to have been invented by a guy, right?
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, for sure. Sure.
Yeah, well, at least they're high heels and not high toes. Yeah. At least we didn't put the heel, like, in the front, where you have to kind of walk awkwardly, you know, with your toes up.
Well, isn't that what ballet shoes are?
Well, no, I mean, like, where your feet are sticking up because the heel is in the front of the toe.
So it doesn't increase your height at all.
Only but from the mind of John. Jesus.
It doesn't increase your height, but it still flexes the calf muscle, right?
Right.
Thank God you didn't invent shoes, dude, because we would be even more uncomfortable now. I'm sure of it.
So no,
a place to hold a gun in there.
Yeah. I will say though, I've when I see my wife walking in high heels, it just like, it doesn't look comfortable or natural, and so I don't understand. But
it doesn't. But, you know, I have a friend. Her mom has worn high heels since she was, like, basically an adolescent. And she wears them all the time, even around the house, which I cannot understand. Even when we go on vacation, like, we go on a cruise every year, and she comes along because she likes to gamble. So she's just in the, you know, in the casino while we go off and swim with sharks and do crazy things. Yeah. Anyway, so, like, when she takes her shoes off, she's so used to high heels that she walks barefoot in her tippy toes. I'm not even exaggerating.
She walks around
the house in her tippy toes.
I want to believe she wears the high heels on the beach as well.
No, probably. Well, I think I heard that Beyonce has said that she's uncomfortable out of high heels because she's in high heels her entire life. Yeah.
Who knows? So yeah. I will say so. My wife is 5 foot flat, right? She pretended to be 5'1" for a long time, but she got measured at the doctor a few years ago, and her deceit was exposed. She's 5'0", and so I think she does like high heels, because she is pretty darn short. But whatever.
I'm 5'5", and But I'm Mexican, so that's really tall for a woman, a Mexican woman. And I wear chanclas everywhere. I cannot do the heels. Like, I can do one of those like 90s wedge heels type things, you know, that they had that were popular in the 90s. I can do that because you still have a stable base, but like the little thin heels, no way.
Yeah, nah. The toothpick that supports your body weight. Yeah,
I will break my ankle. I'm a klutz, so klutz and high heels, no. bad combination.
Well, all right. I don't even remember if Ruth wore high heels, but she did buy her father about 30 pounds of cancer as a treat for coming home from Australia.
Right. She didn't know what his vices were.
Yeah. And I think
is that the idea?
Tucked away in the bathroom was like a prostitute in a cake ready to jump out or something. Right?
Dad, I got you some cigarettes and a prostitute and some fireworks.
Yeah, and a couple more guns.
Yeah. This is a funny movie. I must say, I really wanted Dick Sherman, the main guy, to be geysered.
Oh, you mean Ranger Dick?
Ranger Dick, I couldn't stand his cutesy little, I don't know, the romantic comedy aspects of this where, you know, he was flirting with Ruth and, you know, she would like, what would she do? She would like walk a certain way and he's like, oh, walking's against the rules, ma'am. You're going to have to kiss me later. That was like, he's the worst.
He is the worst.
It's like there's joking around, but there's joking around. Oh, like he's joking around in this, like, with the authority to issue a Yellowstone style ticket or whatever they do.
And yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I couldn't stand his abuse of power.
Abusing that Ranger's badge.
Yeah.
Sir, the rule book here says I have to date your daughter tonight, so we'll see you in a few hours.
Rule book, Jesus.
It was one thing, you know, because it annoyed me for that reason, but it also annoyed me that he kept using the same joke. He's just this guy who uses the same joke all the time. He's like, this one worked. She laughed the first time.
But that's what men do.
Oh, well, yeah. Can I compare that
to... You should talk to
Katie about this because sometimes she's like, I hate that joke. I'm like, I like it. tickles me just great.
Have you had too many Toonces jokes? Is it getting to be too much?
No, it's not Toonces.
Okay. So I will say, on the flip side, my wife included, and several women I know, if a meal is made and you're like, oh, that was really good. Well, guess what you're eating for the rest of your life every time you visit. Right. And so like we have some cousins who live nearby and they get fed the same thing because once upon a time they said they liked it. And anyway, I don't know if that's the same kind of impulse, but
yeah,
gelatin and desserts.
I think men gravitate towards that because you're afraid of like asking questions to see, oh, is there something else you might like? You know what I mean? Like, is there something else you might laugh at? You know, because you want to do what works. I understand the impulse, but men do that. That checks that part of it.
And then how long do you have to persist in fake laughing? You're like, ha ha, it's still funny.
Yeah.
All right. Well, exactly. This was not a comedy, but it was kind of funny. Unless you guys have anything more to say about Yellowstone, we'll move on to Blues Brothers.
That's fine.
Okay. Melissa, who is not Brooke, the Blues Brothers, it is all yours.
So I had not seen this movie in ages, so I want to thank y'all because it was fun to revisit this movie. I don't know how I forgot that Aretha Franklin's in this, but she's like one of the best parts of this movie.
She's great.
And she actually has some acting chops. I was surprised. I didn't remember the acting part. I just remember the performance, but she's not a bad actor, really. Because sometimes, you know, like singers try and cross over to acting and they're like, oh God, that's terrible.
Well, what are some wonderful examples? Like Butterfly and Glitter, were both of those Mariah Carey movies?
No, I was going to say that whatever that Mariah Carey movie was, holy crap.
I always wanted to see that. Jennifer Hudson in the movie Respect.
Oh, I thought that was good.
You haven't seen that.
She does a good job. I will say I loved the –
Wasn't she in Dreamgirls? She was really good in that.
I can't remember her name in – she was really good in Dreamgirls. I do remember that.
All the Madonna movies. What is it? Shanghai Surprise and Who's That Girl?
Who's That Girl? Those are the really bad ones.
Or yeah. What's that?
Desperately Seeking Susan. Desperately Seeking Susan. Pretty good, but no, you know, Madonna wasn't the main person.
Yeah, she was barely in it.
What about really? Dick Tracy?
I thought she was good at Dick Tracy.
No, that movie. I don't know. I fell asleep halfway through it. It was like the second movie at a drive-in thing, and I fell asleep. You know, because that movie doesn't start till like 10:30, 11, and I was a little girl. I mean, what do you want? Anyway, so, but that should be like a category. Have you done that category yet? Like,
it's in our list of categories, like entertainers from other fields who decide to try acting. It's a category that could come up in the future.
You're gonna watch a lot of terrible movies.
Possibly,
Sting and Dune.
Yeah, so I love Sting and Dune. I do love athletes who think they can act as well.
Those athletes are so much worse than musicians, yeah. Usually.
Well, like, there's something about Mary. He was, what is his name? Brett Favre. He was only in it for like 2 minutes and it was awful. It was really bad.
All right. Well, all right. The Blues Brothers.
Okay. So this is the story of the Brothers Blue, Jake and Elwood, who Jake just got out of prison. And I love at the beginning how, I guess because John Belushi, who plays Jake, he was such a big star at the time. Like, for the first, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, they don't even show it in front of his face. Like, every scene that he's in, we only see the back of his head. Basically, like, it's going to be some big reveal. Like, we don't know he's in the movie. You know what I mean? It was
We got Belushi for this one. Surprise.
But we're going to tease it a little more before we show you him. Even though,
like, is it Jim Belushi? Could it be Jim?
Ooh. He's getting out of the Hoosegal, and his brother Elwood picks him up in a funnily enough, an old police car that he got at auction. One of their first visits, which seems weird, you know, that one of the first places they go is where they grew up, this like orphanage where they grew up. But the nun there, who I love, she tells them that they're about to lose the building because they have $5,000 in back taxes that need to be paid, or else they lose the place. And so they don't want to lose the place where they grew up. And they're like, oh, $5,000 easy, you know, because they're criminals. And I guess it's easy to make $5,000 in a day or two. But she refuses because she doesn't want their criminal money. So they have to find a legit way to raise the money. And they decide they're going to get their old band back together to raise this $5,000. And the bulk of the middle of the movie is spent going to each band member and what they're doing now, and the brothers trying to convince them to come back. That's where we get to meet all the individual band members, and hijinks ensue, as they do in pretty much any Belushi movie. And they finally get the band back together. They play these shows, and they just in time get the $5,000 to save their old home where they grew up. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, but there's a lot going on in this movie. Not the least of which, the most annoying part of this movie, and really maybe the only, there's like two parts that really annoyed me. But one is that they would drive their car through buildings and the police would drive right through and follow them. And I'm like, okay, public safety, anyone? Why would a police car drive through a building and possibly kill someone to follow some two big criminals?
I feel like all the police were Ed 209s in the movie.
So I
just programmed to just continue the pursuit. So
I think they had like there's a collateral damage limit that they're allowed to hit. Like, so when they were driving through the mall, probably 10 people died. That's within the limits. So I will say we watched the movie Bullet, which is really famous for its car chase scene. But this movie has two car chase scenes, which are both incredible. And I love the one in the mall because it feels like they intentionally have to hit every single store, right? Like, they are steering into the stores, and it's a pretty great scene. And then you have the Blues Brothers just kind of pretty chill about it. And they're like, baby clothes, huh? This place has got everything. And
I really wish Build-A-Bear existed back then, because I would have loved to see that.
So I got to say, because the budget for this movie was $27 million, and this is a mall that was condemned, so it's not like they had to rebuild it. They just had to wreck it, right? So
maybe they earned money then.
Maybe they earned money. But so that $27 million, how much of that money went into wrecked cars? Because over 100 police cars were destroyed in this film, which is just crazy.
That's so crazy.
Maybe they got them at police auction, just like Elwood did.
Maybe. So I know they were decommissioned or they weren't using them anymore. So is there just like a police car graveyard in Chicago or something?
Maybe they earned money advertising for police auctions.
No, they really do sell them. I used to see it in the paper, the folded newspaper. Remember those?
Yeah.
Back in the day, they really do sell them pretty cheap.
Yeah. The cruisers that they, where I assume they would take off the markings and whatever.
Yeah, they paint them like a nasty beige color, but they still have like the that thing on the front that they use to push cars or whatever, and reinforce it. They still have all that all the reinforcements.
Do they have cop shocks and cop accelerators?
All they do is paint over all the black and white, the insignia and everything.
Because so you could jump what are those?
Bridge. Totally. Yeah.
Okay, so fascinatingly enough, there's a B story in this, and that it's that Jake has a girlfriend who's played by Carrie Fisher.
That's the other annoying part.
Oh, okay. It felt so weird, right? Like, what does this have to do with anything? And she, at this time, The Empire Strikes Back is getting ready to be released, so she's busy.
Fisher.
Yeah, Peak Fisher. So, yeah, so she just chases him around and tries to kill him through, via bazooka and flamethrower and hand grenades and I don't know.
I was only offended because because she's so bad at just making sure Jake is dead.
She's pretty bad at it.
Like, she never makes sure. She's like a Bond villain. She just goes away.
Lessons from the stormtroopers, do she missed every time?
That's what I thought, yeah. Oh man, but so you're right. Like this, as I started watching this movie, and I had seen it before, and after the movie's over, I called my dad because it's one of his favorite movies of all time, and we spoke about it for like an hour. But 2/3 of this movie is just a getting the band back together movie. So this movie, I think, probably wrote itself fairly easily as far as the basic plot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just you got to get the band back together.
It's so weird. I consider this movie. I mean, it's kind of great because it's full of bonuses.
Yeah.
Because it's like. Most Saturday Night Live movies after this, they're just a Saturday Night Live movie, and that's it. It's just, okay, here's this character, and we extended the skit, and so this is it. Blues Brothers, it's like, okay, it's two guys who sing. That's the whole concept. There's not even a joke to it. And so they make the thing, and they're singing in it, and as a bonus – every guest in it is like, a famous R&B artist. You got your James Brown, you got your Aretha Franklin's, you got your Cab Calloway's. They're all in it.
Ray Charles.
A few more guys. Yeah, Ray Charles is in it. And, they don't play themselves. They play characters within the movie, and they have, their own little time to do their thing. And it's like that's something that wasn't in the sketch on Saturday Night Live. Actually, there's nothing in the sketch on Saturday Night Live, which is weird. Okay, and it also, just as a side comment, it blows my mind that they decided to make this movie. Where is, the foundation for this movie? Do you know how many times the Blues Brothers appeared on Saturday Night Live?
Before this movie or in toto?
Before this movie.
Twice? Once?
Twice, yeah. Twice.
Just as musical artists, right?
Yeah, and just as musical, just as a musical sequence, so there's just no story at all, and you can argue there isn't a story in this movie. But then the other bonus is the simple things like, oh, we got to get the band back together, oh, we got to save the community center, oh, we got to get this much money, jumping a bike, to save my stepdad's heart so I can punch him in the face. They have that kind of thing. And so when they play that show at the end and they get the money and all they have to do is, and so the movie's over when they get the money, which is ironically, not from the show attendance, but from the guy backstage who's like, I happen to be a record producer and I happen to have $10,000 or whatever. and it's like so pointless that they even crammed the house because that guy's just there.
He's just there.
But the movie's over at that point. Yeah. And so how bizarre is it that, okay, you know, we're going to make the world's most famous sequence of them driving to deliver the money, and it's the most insane, just every cop car destroyed. And you know, you mentioned the chase from Bullet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about the chase in Point Break. This might be the best movie chase I've ever seen.
No, it is. This is better than Bullet. It's 100% better than Bullet.
It's so absurd. It's in the, and it has. It's after the movie ended. They're just okay. We're just gonna tack this part on. And I mean, I can't explain how just absurd it is to one make a movie about the Blues Brothers and then just like, okay, you know what? Since there's not really a story here, we're gonna make the best car sequence that's ever been filmed.
So, no, it is great. And so there's a point during that car chase where it shows the Bluesmobile hitting over 120 miles per hour. And that's real. So they got a permit from the city of Chicago, and they cleared the street. And while driving under the L train, they were up exceeding 120 miles per hour. So
they were driving Lower Wacker.
Yeah.
Lower Wacker, the same place that was the famous semi-truck sequence in The Dark Knight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So there's also, like, the other part of the plot, right, is along the way they piss off a ton of people who are all coming after them. So, and it all culminates at the Palace Hotel ballroom and then the chase afterwards. So you've got the cops, because what are they in trouble with the cops for running a red light?
Yeah.
I think
originally it was, oh my gosh, this is like Les Miserables here.
Yeah.
They ran a yellow, and it was a yellow light.
Yeah.
I remember Dan Aykroyd said, sir, that was yellow. And I remember thinking that's a yellow light as they go through. Yeah.
Yeah. So running a yellow light, but then, so also they have a bunch of, they have the good old boys chasing after him because they took the good old boys show at that bar.
Right, but the good old boys, they have no leg to stand on because, I don't know, what, they expected to, like, show up at 2 a.m. eventually and
perform.
People are still – yeah.
Yeah, after the place had closed, right? So that makes no sense. But then they also have the Illinois Nazis who were led by Mr. Klopek. So – and I will say, like, that end scene where the Nazi car – falls off the bridge from 7,000 feet.
Right.
Like, bridge terminated above the Sears Tower, apparently.
Yeah, there's an overpass a mile above Chicago. unfinished overpass. How did they even get up that?
I don't know. But all that culminates with everyone trying to chase him down, and they get the county clerk to take their money and pay for the taxes. And the county clerk is Steven Spielberg, so nice little cameo.
Yeah, weird. Yeah, not a bad actor.
Hey, that's one of the best cameos in this movie that we haven't mentioned yet is John Candy.
John Candy's great.
Oh, yes. I love John Candy. Like, you know when they announce a celebrity death, you're like, oh, that's sad. But when John Candy died, I remember being really sad. I mean, he was like a huge part of my childhood. Like all these different movies, the best of which is maybe one of the worst he ever made. It was Summer Rental.
Summer Rental. I love Summer Rental.
Me too. It's a bad movie, but I love it.
It's so bad. It's funny because it's like it was made in the – and this is just a coincidence, but it was made around the same time as One Crazy Summer, and they're the exact same movie.
Are they? So is some
end in a regatta race.
Yes.
Does Summer Rental, is it also one of those We Have to Save Our Something movie?
Yeah, they have to say, like, because there's this jerk who's bugging them, and there's, like, because there's this snooty guy who keeps taking their lobster when they go out to eat, and so and so they challenge him to a race, and it's like, you know, one of us has to leave town, you know, the summer rental.
So I will say,
he gets to stay in his summer rental.
Yeah.
If he wins.
So yeah. I will say I was fairly determined to watch this movie, and so if we hadn't watched it for this category, there is a category sitting there. Waiting to be chosen, called the Save Our Something, Save Our Thing.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, like you said, like Community Center.
Let's watch Summer Rental. Summer Rental and Break-In. Oh, wow.
Oh, I revisited the Break-In movies recently.
Well, which one is it? Is it Break-In or Break-In 2 where they have to save their community center?
It's really? Number 2, Break-In 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Break-In 2 is the saving the community center.
Save Miracles. I
will say also what another movie that fits in that category is Goonies, which is one of John's favorite.
Ah, Yeah, it's one of my.
You guys haven't discussed Goonies yet.
It's John hates Goonies.
2100 favorite movies. Yeah.
That's like my favorite movie from the 80s. And we're talking a decade with like Ghostbusters and Gremlins and some really great movies. Nah, it's Goonies.
Is it?
For sure.
So I think we've had this discussion before. And I think I land on Back to the Future as being my movie of the 80s. And I don't remember if John ever declared a definitive 80s movie for himself.
Well, let's do it now. Feet to the fire, John.
Okay. Back to the Future is just with that in my head, that's really hard to beat as far as just it's in the very middle of the 80s. See, Roy, you picked it. And I think in our conversation, I was just like, these are some really, really good points. I love how it's because Back to the Future was 1985, very specifically 1985. Yes. And like the new wave early 80s were over. And it's almost like the DeLorean sort of represented that, you know? And then
Huey Lewis.
Yeah. And like Huey Lewis was like big in the early 80s, but it kind of – I feel like Huey Lewis represented the kind of sound of the late 80s because I've really noticed a very distinct, you know you know, when people like make fun of the music of the 80s, it's usually the late 80s. I would say, you know, it's kind of like the pop sensibility. You know, everything was a lot more corporate in the late 80s. Max Headroom. Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think
the future is like the amazingly just synchronous, perfect bridge, like tying all of the 80s together. And so with Back to the Future in my head, I can't think of anything else.
It's
That's
tough.
That's a cop out.
It is. Well, I would say, Flash Gordon is my favorite movie, and so I always fall back to that.
I don't think of that as a quintessential 80s film, though, right?
It feels more 70s.
It does. It feels late 70s.
Yeah.
It does. It does feel late 70s. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, I mean, I think Ghost, Beverly Hills, no. RoboCop.
Maybe RoboCop.
RoboCop. That's a good choice. Yeah. RoboCop, you know, the best part of RoboCop is the commercials.
The commercials in RoboCop are very 80s, but also very, this is what the 80s will bring to society. Thing. So,
when I go shopping at Dollar Tree, I'm like, I'll buy that for a dollar. Nobody understands what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, they don't understand the reference. And now it's $1.25, so I can't buy it for a dollar anymore. It's sad.
The $1.25 store, or tree, or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. So,
but it used to be a great joke when they were still a dollar.
I will say,
nobody understood.
Speaking of the 80s, a cameo in this film that I don't even know if you would have called it a cameo at the, it's definitely not a cameo at the time. This is just a very early screen appearance, but there is a really young Paul Rubens in this
film. Paul Rubens. Yeah, yes. I saw it this time. Yeah.
Yeah. As a waiter, right? That's what he was.
I think so. Yeah. Which is the weirdest where they're like, we're going to be obnoxious until you quit this really well-paying job and come back and join the band that doesn't make any money. And he's like, you win. So whatever. So one of the scenes I also really loved is when they go back to visit the penguin and she starts hitting their hands with the ruler and they swear when she does it and it's just like a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
And
yes, that's why I love her. It's hilarious. But also I hate her because I went to Catholic school my whole life except for in kindergarten. And so it did trigger a few memories that weren't great.
Oh.
But you know, because nuns can be vicious, man. They are oof. And mine were Irish, so they, you know, they were particularly cruel. And I don't know what it is about Ireland. It's like the land of nuns, because almost every nun, with the exception of one who was from Australia, so clearly a criminal nun. The rest of them were all from Ireland, and so this did bring back some bad memories. But overall, I liked that nun just because I feel like they kind of earned all those smacks. You know what I'm saying?
So I feel like in the American school system, you more or less can't strike your students anymore, which is good, unless you're a nun. There's like a nun clause, and apparently nuns can beat the crap out of their students. And
because it's not public school.
That's why they
have different rules. Yeah.
Well,
you agree to those rules when you enroll your children. So, you know, but I think even today they don't. Today is very different. But when I was in school, like in the 80s, and then I was in high school in the early 90s, like, they were allowed to do that. They were allowed to, like, corporal punishment was a thing. You know what I mean? You could do it. And I got smacked on the hand with a ruler more times than I can remember. And just like stupid things like we would have to kneel on the floor. And if our skirt didn't touch the floor, it was too short and they'd smack you. Oh. Like stupid thing. Yeah.
So was it ever a surprise smack, or was it usually like, you're being punished, hold your hand out?
No, you knew you were about to get punished, except unless they were like, they had these things called posture checks where like you had to sit up in your desk and have your like hands on the front, you know, of the desk. And if your posture wasn't straight, they would smack you. But they go up and down the aisle. And if you weren't sitting up straight enough, they'd smack you. So you weren't sure if it was coming, like you knew it might be coming because it was subjective. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. What are they can't measure your posture exactly. So like, you know, it was subjective. So you may get smacked, you may not. And I do think that like, you know, they had the ones they liked to smack more than others. Probably. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, man, I'm so glad that the LDS faith believes in the public school system and we didn't have to go to special.
Oh, you don't have special?
No, like, we don't. Schools, no.
Other than BYU.
And I rarely got hit with a ruler in BYU, although I did have a teacher in middle school, a shop teacher who liked to throw objects at the class. And I can't believe that he was never fired, but whatever.
That was public.
It's a different age.
Throckmorton. Did you ever have Throckmorton, John?
No, I wasn't in middle school in Provo.
Oh, that's true. All right, that's true. You went somewhere else. Okay, well, do you guys have anything more you want to talk about with the Blues Brothers? I really enjoyed this movie. I liked it a lot more than I remembered seeing it as a kid. I had a great time, and I mean the plot is kind of really basic, but the music is great and the guests are great and it's pretty funny, and so I really enjoyed it. Almost as good as Yellowstone.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else to say, but because I watched so many movies and I'm kind of like, why did they make this? I asked the same question for Blues Brothers. I think so much of the delight is how excessive can you get here? Like, why? I still just am like dumbfounded by all the cameos and all the not one but two massively famous chase scenes.
Yeah,
and just the amount of destruction and absurdity are just so off the charts with Blues Brothers. And I mean, I would say like they don't make them like they used to, and I love Blues Brothers, but also I watched this movie, I'm like, and I feel guilty watching it. I'm like, they destroyed so many things in this movie. I hope they never make another movie like this. I feel bad watching that one.
This movie was like the car chases were similar to the destruction at the end of Man of Steel, where it's just like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. In a way, it kind of signals, because it was made in 1980, it's like signals the excess of the 80s. It's about to come.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like a precursor to that.
So, speaking of excesses, if you believe IMDb, Dan Aykroyd is quoted as saying that built into the $27 million budget is cocaine.
Yeah.
Like I said,
there was like cocaine on the set that was paid for in the budget. And and Mr.
It's
Belushi.
Amazing you can have that kind of paperwork.
I know. It's just, it's like on the ledger somewhere, right? And so I guess yeah. Mr. Belushi, his acting was enhanced frequently. So, hey, whatever works. So
that reminds me. Okay, that's what I was going to say. I really just love Belushi. I love Belushi a lot. And I would consider myself a big fan of John Belushi. I think he's kind of one of a kind. One thing that okay, like several years ago, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm an archivist. I like this kind of stuff. I'm going to watch the first season of Saturday Night Live. Which is weird because, you know, for one thing, it's not terribly funny, like, no. At all.
And there's a lot of, like, suitable for adults only Muppet sketches.
Yeah, there are, like, these 10-minute long Muppet sketches that's, like, Muppet improv, kind of. I'm like, ugh. But, like, the one thing I know, the funny thing about Saturday Night Live is Chevy Chase famously quit after the first season. And the story is, and I don't know if this is, like, completely accurate because I think there are many reasons for it, but the kind of the general populist story is he was the breakout star, and you know he felt, you know, because of I don't know, hubris, I suppose. Like, he could strike it big in movies, and he did have a super successful movie career, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s. Of course, he's Chevy Chase, but he was, like, considered the star of Saturday Night Live. But it's crazy. You watch the first season of Saturday Night Live, and it's very obvious to me, no, Belushi was the guy, was definitely the guy from Saturday Night Live. And so it's weird. I think he and it makes sense that Farley emulated him so much, yeah, because Farley was so much more than just a big guy. Like, Farley was a comedic genius in the way he just, you know, expelled, like, fits of laughter in other people, you know, toward other people. So anyway, that was my one thing that I wanted to mention. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention is the Illinois Nazis. I didn't look this up, but I think in the mid-70s, there was a famous Nazi march. Was it in Illinois? I want to say it could have been in Ohio. I think that's the reference to that. I mean, nothing to do with anything, but I think that was, like, one of those times, like, this weird Nazi resurgence that they were referencing, that was, like, kind of a historical part of America at that time. And everybody at the time was like, wait, we got to deal with these guys? This is like, the war was 30 years ago. What's going on? And so it's referencing a weird other resurgence that happened back then.
It's so weird to me that as some Americans in their hyper-patriotism somehow feel like that Nazism fits into their hyper-patriotism. And I just, it's so confounding to me that somehow makes sense to anybody. Because, like, it's often like the Nazis are often the people who are, like, the big flag wavers and right, and they're and I just, like, there is nothing less patriotic than Nazis, and I just can't think of anything. So anyway, it's so weird to me.
This is what happens when you have a budget shortfall and you cut education. Yeah. This is the result of that, all of it, seriously.
Yeah, I have my daughter, who's now married and gone, but when she was in high school, she had one of her friends was over, and I overheard him saying, you know, aside from the whole Holocaust thing, Hitler had some good ideas. He just didn't get to implement them. I'm like, oh my gosh. No, Hitler wasn't a good person. He didn't have good ideas. So, but I think even worse than the Illinois Nazis is the fact that they made a sequel to the Blues Brothers. Like, what a terrible idea.
Thank you for not making me watch that one.
The 90s Holocaust right there. Yeah. No, the –
with a child actor. They included a child actor.
I wish you picked Blues Brothers 2000 because it's one of those – I've never seen it. But it's one of those I've been just really, really curious about, because it's one of those movies that people just – like, don't even make fun of that much. It's like, we want to erase this from our – we want to cleanse this from our minds. And that just makes me curious. Like, that's what I just – so I've always been so curious to see it, but because it's like a bigger failure than just an embarrassment.
Oh, well, I guess no one's stopping you from watching it. I hope we never watch it for this podcast.
I might go watch it. Melissa, have you seen it?
I have not. It looks terrible.
It looks terrible.
I don't want to see it. And, you know, I think that people don't bring it up much, not because they don't want to think about it, because they don't want to make the original seem bad by association.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never should have been made. And I'm actually a bit of a fan of John Goodman. I think he's great in a lot of the Coen films that he's in.
So good.
And if you've ever seen True Stories, he's really good in True Stories too.
Yeah.
And so maybe he would have been okay, but like, the second you introduce a child star or child actor, it's all downhill. So anyway, I haven't seen it. I refuse to see it. And like you, John, I don't want to. I just want to kind of decide that it doesn't exist and move on. So
I've decided it exists. I'm going Okay, I'm going to watch it.
Okay. Well, let us know.
Well, some people are masochists.
Yeah.
Some people are sadists and some are masochists. You are clearly a masochist, John. So.
So
thank you. Let me have it.
Maybe next Easter we'll resurrect this category, and then I don't know how we're going to watch another Yellow movie that's not Old Yeller, but
We can watch the Yellow Canyon with the golden hair. That's the movie I wanted to watch, but I was afraid it would be too sexy to watch, or sexist. I guess sexist.
What about that one that Katie mentioned that's about urine? I don't know. There's a movie about urine.
No, The Thin Yellow Line.
Oh,
it's not about urine. You kept insisting it was about urine.
I read the description on IMDb, and it's like There's urine involved, sir.
Oh, really? Okay, no, no, we're thinking of two different ones. Okay. There's one called The Thin Yellow Line about line painters in the road. Yeah, but I couldn't find it streaming anywhere.
Well, all right. You guys ready to talk about Razor Red Lantern?
I think so.
Had any of you seen it before?
I had not.
Okay, so I saw this my senior year in college in a film as art class, and I'll just right up front, like visually, this is a beautiful movie, and it just kills me that I couldn't even find an HD version of it. Right? So, like, I swear we're watching this VHS style, and this movie deserves like a 4K treatment. But whatever. So, Raise the Red Lantern is not a comedy very much. You have Gong Li, who I think this is her second film, but it's kind of her big breakout movie. And this is the movie is from Zhang Yimou, and I think this movie was banned in China for a while. So already that puts it up on the good list. But the plot, real quickly, is her father has died. She's living with her stepmother, who doesn't really want to support her.
Aren't I supposed to talk about this one?
Did I talk about Yellowstone?
Yeah.
I am so sorry. So, John, you should just edit out everything I said, or not. But anyway, John, would you please sum up Raise the Red Lantern?
All right, Jumpy McPants.
Sorry. I love this movie so much, so I got excited. Okay.
Well, okay. Why was it banned in China?
Because anything that makes any part of Chinese history look bad is, right? It's like, it's... Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. You're not allowed to acknowledge the bad things in your history. Does that sound familiar to some people right now? So,
to some Nazis.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I was wondering about that. I didn't realize it was banned. I was kind of thinking it was not banned because it was an indictment of like Western thinking a little bit. Mm. You know, like in Western societies, you know, they have this like power imbalance rather than, you know, the state spreading everything out. So, oh my gosh, I'm going to sneeze. Oh my gosh.
So, interestingly enough, the movie that came before this that Zhang Yimou and Gong Li did together was called Huajia, which means to live. And that's kind of like this, it's a critique of the Cultural Revolution. And that movie probably should have been banned. China, right?
Yeah, you'd think that one would be banned. The thing is, Gong Li, and I'm not going to say her name. I apologize because it was a lot easier for me to write numbers down rather than names, which is more than these people deserve.
Fourth wife.
Sure. Yeah. But she, at the beginning of the movie, she's kind of like this cool student, but, you know, there's family troubles. She has to drop out of school, and she's, you know, she has to drop out of university, and she seems pretty enlightened, but circumstances change, and so she's like, okay, I'll go ahead, I'll get married, I'll ship off. And so she immediately ships off to her new husband's house, and she is the fourth wife, or as they say, the fourth mistress. And immediately she just goes into kind of a closed system patriarchy.
So can I, right? I think, so they call her Sit Tai Tai, which the subtitle says fourth mistress, but Tai Tai is wife.
Okay.
There's a different Chinese term for mistress.
So it's bad translation.
It's a bad translation.
That's big difference, though.
It is.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference, because my subtitles say mistress as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it means wife. Sit Tai Tai means fourth wife.
See, it's interesting that they would choose mistress instead of wife, because she has the whole conversation to the camera at the very beginning. Yeah. Should I become a wife, or would I have more freedom as a concubine? I think she kind of debates the two. She's like, okay, but I'll go ahead. I'll do the society thing, the appropriate society thing, and I'll become a wife. And then they call her a mistress for the rest of the movie. Yeah. And so part of me was a little bit like, okay, wait, maybe she changed. I mean, I didn't. It was in the back of my mind, you know, just the whole mistress wife thing. I'm like, I'm pretty sure she's the wife. You know, I think that's still based
on
the situation.
They mentioned that she had like a wedding, right? How was your wedding?
Yeah, there's a wedding. Yeah, a red wedding.
Ooh.
With red lanterns and stuff. So she immediately goes in and she makes friends with all the other wives. The first wife is someone she doesn't deal with because she is just old and done with it. She is just done.
She's like a mummy.
Yeah. Yeah. The second wife is the nice one who is
face of a Buddha.
Face of a Buddha, but heart of a demon or whatever
scorpion.
She is.
Heart of a scorpion.
Heart of a scorpion. She is really nice, and she becomes friends with the second wife who shows her around. And she's like, yeah, stay away from the third wife. And she doesn't really have a choice on that because, you know, the third wife stays away from her for the most part, except, you know, when she interrupts things. The third wife is an opera singer, and she's sort of a diva, and she, you know, speaks her mind. She interrupts. She kind of oversteps the boundaries when the husband or the master has his time with her, the fourth wife. Sometimes the third wife will interrupt, like, I'm sick, come take care of me or whatever. And so, you know, there's just kind of this, she immediately jumps into the politicking of jealousy and wives and the power struggle between them, because as the story goes, the master will proclaim every night who he's going to spend the night with. And the whole house makes the huge announcement, put the lantern in front of the second wife's house, put the lantern in front of the fourth wife's house, put the lantern in front of the first wife's house. And so every night it's just like, you know, that's where your validation comes from. And so eventually that piles up. It weighs on these women, I suppose. I mean, part of me, like right from the very beginning, I wish Gong Li like didn't fall into the system quite so fast. I think right from the very beginning, she was a little bit, doing what she could to like have that status. I kind of wanted to see, and I didn't see it because, you know, reasons, and there, you know, this is. This is allegorical and stuff, you know, for society and all that. But I wanted all the wives to kind of get together and just be like, you know what? Who needs this guy? Like, what does it matter?
So that's the, that's maybe the most important point of this film is the wife dynamic. And we'll talk about it.
Right. And the wife dynamic is definitely not that. It's pretty much, you know, their entire beings are defined by this, which disturbs me.
By
right?
Foot massages. It's all about the foot massage.
By foot massages. So anyway, I'm not going to go into super details, but some of the big problems is like her servant she is jealous of. The master kind of macks on her servant as well. And she gets her servant in trouble through flute gate because she thinks her servant stole her flute. Turns out the master just stole it and burned it because, you know, he thought it was a gift from a boy, but it was like this special flute from her father. And she's like, oh, you know what? I'm still going to get mad at this other woman about that. And then there's Lantern Gate where the servant steals all the red lanterns for herself because, you know, I think she has the fantasy of being a mistress herself kind of thing. And then, of course, there's Voodoo Gate. Where she sends away to like New Orleans or whatever, and it's a voodoo doll of the fourth wife, and she's sticking pins in it, and of course the fourth wife is pissed. She gets mad at the third wife. She cuts the second wife's ear off. Gets the servant in trouble. Yeah.
But do you remember who made the voodoo doll for the servant?
The voodoo doll. She assumes. The third wife helped her out, which is incorrect.
Incorrect.
Because the third wife is the overt, like, hostile toward the other wives.
Yeah.
She's just overt hostile. The second wife is the conniving one who always has a smile on her face and is friendly, but behind the scenes, she's doing everything she can, you know, to downgrade all the other wives in the house so the master will stay with her.
So that's
a weird turn that you learn that, you know, the one who was nice was actually being the worst to her all along.
Yeah, so she has that I think there's a – when she confronts the third wife early in the movie because she's singing and then she stops her singing. But, like, the third wife comes over to her and says, you know – what does she say? She says, I hate the second wife. She's the worst. Stay away from her. And at that point, you're like, but the second wife seems so sweet.
Totally doing that. Anyway, In a fit of jealousy and drunkenness, the fourth wife outs the servant.
No, outs the third wife.
Okay, yeah, no, I was okay. I wasn't sure if it was both of them. Okay, the fourth wife outs the third wife because the third wife is having a fit with the doctor.
We skipped a major point. So the fourth wife faked a pregnancy.
Oh, I skipped the fake present. What was she going to do? What was her plan?
Her plan was to get pregnant after pretending to be pregnant.
That's true. Her plan, she's like, I would have gotten pregnant eventually because since she was pregnant, she was more favored and therefore the master would spend more nights with her, right?
Yeah. And so
yeah, that was the plan.
Yeah, that was exposed. And that's when she outed the servant because the servant's the one that told the second wife. There's a lot of wifing going on here. But that's when she outed the servant, and then the servant's punishment was to kneel down in the snow until she apologized, which she never did, so she died of hypothermia.
Right, yeah. And so, yeah, she didn't have to die. It's great that she sticks to her guns, but also I'm just like, why are you sacrificing so much for this closed society, you know? I would think there was life outside the walls. Maybe there wasn't a life outside the walls. As far as we know, the entire universe is inside these walls.
Well,
and
the cinematography and like the layout of the place is kind of built to make it feel like this place is everything and it goes on forever, right? That there's no end to this compound. But anyway.
It's like we don't see the end. I suppose you could interpret that as okay, this isn't an infinite compound in the sense that there is a universe. Or you can interpret it as, okay, this place is a prison.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're not getting out of this. But the thing is, she outs the third wife for having the affair. The third wife is taken to the forbidden upper room. She's like, oh, what is this room? Well, it's a room where you kill wives that break the rules.
Yeah.
And so the
cheat on the master, right?
And so, like you
said, she outed her in like a drunken fit. So, so I think when she sobered up and she's like, "What happened to the thrice?" Remember when you mentioned that she was having an affair?
Yeah. It's like you mentioned that, and you know, is petty as the fourth wife is, she probably it's not something you know that's still a code that you don't break.
Yeah,
I suppose. So you know. The liquor loosened the lips, I suppose. And then when the fifth wife comes along, they're like, oh, she's like, who's that? Oh, that used to be the fourth wife, but now she's mad. She wanders the halls like a ghost of this home, an insane person. So, bizarre movie, so much different than I thought. It seems, again, I'm surprised it was banned, but also it seems, you know, maybe I'm not surprised it was banned because I feel like, you know, what it's saying is, you know, the society you're subjected to subjects you, I suppose, is the best way of putting it. They're sniping each other. They're doing all these things to each other. But it's in the, you know, how am I trying to put it? It's society's fault is, you know, what I'm trying to, you know, the power that put them there is not hindered by their sniping. It just becomes more powerful in a sense. And the master doesn't have a name really. And it's just,
we never see it's just full closer. Face.
So yeah. You sometimes see like a side shot, but it's not very clear and it's not important, right? Because who the master is, isn't important.
Yeah.
So
the things holding them to these standards and the way they hurt each other, he doesn't need to have a face. It's not just him. It's the societal norms. Yeah. It's what's expected. I understand what they were going for, like in all of that. And there's definitely a big feminist subtext going on here, but I hated this movie.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. I thought you would either love it or hate it. I didn't think there'd be any mildness about this for you.
Yeah, there's no wishy-washy in between for me.
So I find this movie so fascinating on a couple of – so one is like they're all in this silk prison, right? Mm-hmm. where they're taken care of if they follow the rules, and they and everything is, like he says several times, don't you love it here? Don't you enjoy your foot massages and the food? And as long as you're like the first wife, you're doing really, or as long as you're favored by the master, you're doing really well. And it's not like on the nights when he doesn't spend time in your place that it's awful. You know, you have to, you don't get to choose the food, but it's not awful. But so, and you make the point, right, John, that these women should band together.
Yeah.
And should take care of themselves. But that's part of the whole thing, because they're sort subtly being punished when they're not being chosen. Right. And so they are compelled, I think, like that to act against each other. And I think
they're defined that way.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so like your status is based on if you get visited, and the only way to get visited is to screw everyone else.
Yeah.
Right. To wreck everyone else. And I think the third wife is able to kind of find happiness outside of this a little bit, because she's got the doctor, which is, you know, breaking the ultimate rule. But like she breaks the rules. But so there's all this going on, and so I love the subtext, but also just like watching this movie is so gorgeous. I love the colors, and like you have the reds and the whites and the changes in the seasons and the shots from above of the courtyards, and it's just so beautiful to look at. And then the composition of the shots, it shows her all the time within door frames, right? And in door frames within door frames within door frames, to kind of give you the idea that this, there's no escaping. This place goes on forever, and it is a prison. And I just think it's so beautifully shot, and it's so well made. And it's, I don't think that this is like out of Africa where I'm like, this is really pretty, but it's a stupid movie. No, I love this movie with all my very heart. So, but anyway.
Melissa Rebuttal.
Melissa Rebuttal.
Okay, so there were some aspects of this movie that were really great. I understand why it's so, you know, highly regarded as a film, and especially the visuals. Like, you feel like this place is like a labyrinth, and they're trapped in it, and they'll never get out. You know, they did a great job in terms of the visuals and cinematography. I mean, like, that place when it's blanketed in snow feels so stark. It feels so much like a prison. It's like Shawshank in Winter or something. You know what I'm saying? It's I understand all of that. But the thing that gets me, and maybe because I'm a woman, and I'm fed up with women being pitted against each other in film and television. I'm fed up with the cattiness. I'm fed up with how women are always shown as enemies or competition. I've had it up to here with it already. I've felt this way for years now. I can't stand it. And so maybe if I'd seen this movie when it first came out, I could have appreciated the feminist subtext more. I could have, and it's not that I don't appreciate it. I'm just so tired of watching women go after each other instead of banding together to help each other to, you know, try and have a better life, to just have friendship that isn't competitive. You know, I can't, it's so hard for me. You know, when you've lived your whole life, I'm 45 years old. Okay. And I've seen a lot in my 45 years. I lived a lot of life in my time, and I, it's too much.
Yeah.
You know, it just gets to be too much after a while. And this movie, even if I didn't feel that way, this movie traffics in misery porn. It really does. These women are miserable. That's why they do these things to each other, especially fourth wife. She just, you know, she went from like this student, this young woman who was vibrant and seemingly had the whole world ahead of her, in as much as you could have had the whole world ahead of you as a woman during that time in that place. But she regressed so quickly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I totally felt that. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't earn that. I felt like she went from this student who had the world at her feet to like this woman who abused her maid for no real reason, you know what I'm saying? Other than what, petty jealousy, so she wouldn't become this wife. You know what I'm saying? I don't understand it. They didn't earn that, first of all. So that was, to me, a plot hole in a sense.
I think what they tried to bring out with her, you know, being the educated one is I think that she felt like she was forced into the situation and she was above it, right? Like, she's here because my stupid stepmother won't take care of me, so what choice do I have? And so I kind of feel like they brought up her education all the time, and I feel like she felt like she was superior to her situation. And so I also feel like that, like, the thing that you hate about this movie is also the message of this movie. So I don't think the way I read it isn't the point that, well, look at women. They sure, are self-destructive, right? I think the message is, look what this male-dominated society is forcing these women to do, right? Because I think that happens a lot still, right? Where we have a society that is structured to pit women against each other. And it shouldn't be that way. And I think that's the message of this movie. Like, this is a really crappy situation. Here's the result. And it shouldn't be like this. It shouldn't be like this. And it's not their fault. Right? So I feel like the message is what is the thing that you hate is the message of the movie that you should hate it.
But I still hate it.
Yeah. I totally get that, because I like the movie more than you did. For sure, Melissa, but I was annoyed from the very beginning, like, regarding that. I think she did jump right into it. She did fall into the trap way early, and it bothered me to see. And I think the movie wanted me to feel that, that's fine. And whether or not that's a good idea of the movie, I guess, that's another story. And it's plenty of a reason to dislike the movie. It's like, okay, you know what? I didn't want the movie to do that. The movie had no right to do that. I get it. I don't need it. I don't need it said this way. I think what the movie's trying to do, and maybe it has varying degrees of success, is sort of express the main character is the society, and it is a parable, and it kind of necessitated maybe an exaggeration of the way the women treated each other. And I think it works better with some people than it does others. I think regardless, as you were talking, it is easier to watch this as a man than it is a woman. and I think, in Roy, and to a lesser extent me, we enjoy finding fault in the patriarchy and society, and that this movie is saying that, that there is evil in, continuing and enforcing, certain societal things that, that cause this kind of behavior. And that's easier for us, not easier for us to see, but easier for us to enjoy, I think, from that just kind of clinical perspective, because, we're not seeing it through the eyes of women, because, we aren't. And to a lesser extent, it's easier to enjoy this as a man if you are like this misogynist person who's like, way to go, society.
We need to go back to that era.
And so I think, for some strange reason, this movie might be easier for men to watch. But I definitely agree with you that I was irked from the very beginning that, I'm just like, come on. You don't have to be this way. These characters don't have to be this way. They just kind of had to be this way to get the parable of it all.
But they get punished for not being that way, right? Like, they're more or less punished if they try to. And I also feel like if it weren't for an overindulgent evening of rice wine, I feel like the fourth wife and the third wife would have formed a friendship. And I think that would have developed into a decent relationship. But what can you do? Because she's dead now. So
look, I've said it before. I said it again. Polygamy never works.
But I understand what you're saying, John. But they would be punished if they didn't act that way. She would not be punished for not abusing her maid. Like, that was that really bothered me maybe the most out of everything. There's a lot of things that bother me in this movie, but that bothered me the most is the abuse, that she, would just be so cruel. You know what I'm saying? Out of petty jealousy, It made me so sick. And it just kept happening over and over again. Starting with the, oh, your hair smells, all the way to, you know, the very end. It just, ugh.
So I really think that she's coming from a society like the one that she has entered herself into, right? Where she's come mm-hmm. from a society where class distinction is so strong. And so she's not like this poor kid off the street who's all of a sudden evil. I think she was probably raised in an environment where servants were looked down upon. And I think that's an extension of her character as far as where she came from and who she is. And it is awful, right? Like, she's supposed to be the sympathetic character, and she's not really, right? Because she is awful to her servant. Yeah. And I'm not sure who the sympathetic character is. I think maybe third
one. Maybe the maid?
The maid? I don't know. Well, I mean, the maid just wants to kind of break out of her position, right? And so I have a hard time having sympathy for her either, but she does just get dumped on throughout the entire film.
And that's the thing. It's hard to be sympathetic to anyone because, you know, because no one decides. And I think the movie, I don't know. I think the movie was smart to not let us be sympathetic to anyone, because it reinforces that whole idea that, you're just not going to want to be a sympathetic character within the constraints of this particular society that you live, because everyone is incentivized to behave the way they are by the universe they live in, and not by their own conscience necessarily, because that's like outside of that.
So I kind of feel like if she had finished university, she still would have been a jerk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no,
that's true. Can I go back to, you know, something again? I want to talk about how this movie was banned, apparently. And I just really, Roy, it was something you said that made me realize, like, oh, I'm surprised this movie was banned. Because when you said, you know, society, it incentivizes everybody to screw everybody else, I thought, oh, this must have been very popular in China, because the whole thing is an indictment of Western capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, like in China, at least, you know, they make an effort to, you know, and I don't know how successful it is. I haven't like studied it. I know like Chinese communism was way like more successful than the Soviet communism, for example. But at least, you know, the idea that the state tries to level everybody out and takes care of everybody in that way, and it doesn't rely on a cloud, because this is very specifically takes place before communism came to China.
Yeah, about three decades or two decades.
Yeah,
before.
Yeah. This is what capitalism does. It's like they have to scratch and claw underneath the people who have the real power, and that's capitalism.
So China's so fascinating as a country. So like politically they're a communist country, but economically they're a market economy. And I think that is why they have survived when the Soviet Union collapsed, because the Soviet Union held to a communist economy, which is just really hard to be successful, right? China's economy is pretty healthy because they basically, you know, it's not communist anymore. But as far as like what you're saying, China's so interesting because they are so gung-ho about being communist, but they also have so much pride and in their history. Like, they revere their history. And so also, you can't critique our history even if it's a part of our history that we didn't like either.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Does that
sure.
make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fascinating. Okay. Well, I'm still. They should have spun it like this is anti-U.S.
If the master had shown up in his Rex Kwando exercise pants.
Yeah.
The stars and stripes and sweats.
Yeah. The master is, you know, George H.W. Bush is the master.
You know, it
yeah.
might have been fascinating because at this time you could have had it be like someone British, right, as the master who's just like totally taking advantage of Chinese society. But obviously Zhang Yimou, the director, that's not the statement he wanted to make. So, but anyway, if you, Huoj is a pretty fascinating film that to live. And that's, it's all about the Cultural Revolution. And I don't know if Misery Porn's not your favorite, then maybe avoid that one too. There's no such thing as so. There's kind of this artsy Chinese period of movies in the '90s, and none of them are happy, right? Mm-hmm. So,
And a movie doesn't have to be happy. It doesn't. But I think when you've lived your whole life like me, just, you know, because like especially like in Mexican culture, you know, like there's certain expectations. And I remember growing up. And people like, how many children you want to have? I'm like, I don't know if I want kids. you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, she must be a lesbian. And it turns out I'm like 40% lesbian. You know what I mean? But like, I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it weighs on you. And so when you see it, even if it's beautifully shot and the cinematography is gorgeous and everything is really beautiful, like this is, you know, if it wasn't so miserable, this would be an eye candy movie. But it just, you have to see it from my perspective.
So would you say this movie's traumatizing?
No, it's not traumatizing, but it's infuriating because it, like, I know they're showing the era, and that era for women was not happy. And I know women had it way worse than us in the past, but that doesn't mean we have it good now just because others had it worse. You know what I'm saying? And so it just, it's infuriating watching women do this to each other. And I know that they were like pawns in this societal game. And I get it. I get all the subtext. I get the feminist bent to it, but that doesn't make it easy to watch.
I understand. I understand.
And, you know, as you said, I think it was John who said something earlier that struck me a little, but I didn't want to interrupt you. It was like, you know, that it makes it easier for us to watch, or that men can enjoy it to an extent watching this kind of thing. You said, something like, or maybe it was Roy, but one of you said, that you, you see like the patriarchy and you understand how, it functions and you don't like it. But for women, it's not about seeing it or calling it out. It's about breaking it down. That's what we want to do. And when you see something as infuriating as this, And the misogyny we see in our society today has its roots in eras like this still to this day. It's hard to watch. It's really hard. Like I appreciate this movie for its artistic look, the aesthetic, and even the storytelling to some extent, but it's just misery porn. And if you're a woman who's been mired down in patriarchy your whole life, It's too much. Nobody ever gets to come up for air. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you see nothing new here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense.
So it's fascinating today, because in today's culture, like you mentioned, right? I think we live in a society where everyone's like, but things are fine now, right? Because apparently, obviously, there's no more racism in this country because we elected a black president, right? Which, like, some people would argue that electing a black president, like, was a huge step backwards in this country being able to like confront the fact that racism still exists. Right.
Yeah.
Cause like we now live in the post-racist, era, but that's 100%.
Now we can't talk about it anymore.
Yeah. And now it makes it harder to talk about. Like, what are you talking about? We had a black president. Right. So, and I think the same thing is people are like, no, society is way far along, but so then why are you guys getting paid like 20% less than us for the same job in 2022?
Actually, as a Latina, it's more like 40%.
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned you're 40. You mentioned you're 40% gay. So I've concluded I'm at least, I'm going to go ahead and say 6% gay, because I love going shoe shopping for my wife.
So. Okay. That's acceptable. Bisexuality is a spectrum.
Yeah.
You can be whatever percent you want.
Well, there you go. I elect 6%.
There are only like 4 or 5 guys I've been attracted to in my life. So I'm pretty low.
Is one of them Zitorsh?
Actual men are like on screen.
On screen.
Oh, well, that's different.
Well,
yeah, it's so that counts as like, I don't know, half of a person, maybe.
Half a percent, maybe.
I'm just saying,
It's not fictional, it's not the same. It has to be in person, somebody you can actually like be with or pursue or something.
All right. Yeah. Well, I am the most heterosexual person ever then.
Yeah. So I will say, like, I have seen people, like you said, John, like in movies where I'm like, that is a really handsome man. But I can't say like I've ever been in a room with another guy. I'm like,
Yeah, because it's different when you actually have a chance, right? Because then all of a sudden your hetero comes out in full force. Yeah.
Yeah, totally, totally.
All right.
No fainting couches needed for me at the YMCA or wherever men are. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to do some awards, but first, commercial break for us.
Oh, commercial break. Oh, do you want me to do the commercial break?
Yes, sir.
As I oft do. Everybody, go ahead and find us on Facebook. That might be the most important thing you do because that's where our polls are and our voting goes. We are yours, mine, and theirs. Do a search on Facebook. It shouldn't be too difficult to find. So vote in the polls, and that will decide the genres we watch, the movies we watch, and you can also speak up there, and you can be on the show, just like Melissa is right now. Yeah. Like we don't know Melissa. We've never met her. But she's totally on the show. And if you're listening right now, and this is something I've said for years and years and years and years, if you have a good time listening to us, that's nothing compared to the good time you have actually being on the show and talking. Mm-hmm. It's always way more fun than it is to listen. So
unless we traumatize you, unless, you know.
Right. Unless we make you watch a movie you despise, which happens.
It happens.
Often,
hey, but, you guys made us watch Dream a Little Dream, okay?
We had to watch Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was an abomination. Well, okay, you know what?
I think I may have had a part in that, too.
you probably voted.
Dream a Little
Dream isn't that bad. We always talk about how bad Dream a Little Dream is. It's not that bad.
It is that bad.
We always talk about it, but it's about 40 minutes longer than it should be, and also nothing happens in the movie. So it's just annoying. Anyway, Facebook. Go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, go to Stitcher. Give a search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs. You will find it because we're kind of a one-of-a-kind podcast, not too many other podcasts called Yours, Mine, and Theirs. Give us 5 stars on all of those things. Give us thumbs up on Spotify or whatever you do on Spotify. We could use the exposure because we are thousands of dollars in debt. We have not turned a profit. We need more listeners.
Am I unaware of like the bookkeeping? I don't know how we're thousands of dollars in debt.
I thought you were in charge of bookkeeping.
Oh, then that explains it. That's why. Okay.
Okay. No, that's bad. Email us. Go to yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com and give us your screed. Tell us why we're wrong. Tell us why we're right. For example, that would be a great place to suggest movie genres that we haven't talked about that we can vote on later. So go ahead and do that. yoursmindtheirspodcast@gmail.com. Yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com. If you know, say you're listening on iTunes right now and it only goes back like 20 or so, you can go all the way back to the beginning where we talk about like True Grit and The Thing and stuff like that. That's podcast one. If you go to yoursmindtheirspodcast.blogspot.com, you can download all the MP3s directly, and that's the way you want to do it. Our voicemail number is 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. Andy left us a voicemail. We played it at the beginning of this podcast. You can leave a voicemail too. And you know what? You can say some wrong, incorrect things. We'll still play it. We still respect you. We won't make fun of you that much, but we promise we won't answer the phone when you call, and you can just say whatever you want. It's an open sandbox. Do it now. Why aren't you doing it?
Do it now.
Why aren't you doing it? Stop this podcast. Call your phone right now, 801-896-4542. I assume you're listening to this podcast on your phone, but if you're listening to it on another device, you can go ahead and keep playing my voice right now while you call 801-896-4542. Okay, that is contact info.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have some awards. You guys ready to do these?
I was born ready to do these.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Melissa, here we go. So John and I do awards in slightly different order. We have our reasons. I'm going to start with best title. And Melissa, what is your favorite title of these three films?
Despite the fact that I hated it, Raise the Red Lantern. Mm. I really liked it. It's a good title. It's appropriate. But, the movie still perk.
So would Raise the Red Lantern have made for a good title for a Chinese romantic comedy?
Sure.
Not anymore.
Hmm. Or a treasure hunting film. I don't know. Well, we'll get there.
Possibly, all right. Yeah.
All right, John, it's your turn. Favorite title?
Well, Raise the Red Lantern. I agree with Melissa. I like verb titles rather than noun titles. The other two are just noun titles.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with you, too. So there you go. Best movie poster, John.
Okay, well, it's Yellowstone. You know, it's got the big old school stuff, and it kind of gives some stuff away, saying the geyser is the murderer, but that's led to its intrigue. I like that old school poster.
Mm. Melissa, what do you think?
Same. It's got a lot going on, that poster. but I sort of like that old-timey thing where they show you like 10 different scenes from the movie. Like, I don't know why. I think it's kind of cool.
All right. Well, I agree with you guys. Yellowstone has a great poster. I love it. And sometimes the old-timey posters suck, but this one was awesome. So best tagline. I'm excited to see if we're 100% so far. Melissa, your favorite tagline?
I didn't read the taglines on this one, so I don't know.
All right. Well, there goes your wish for the week, Roy. Mm-hmm. My tagline is the Great Geyser Murder Mystery.
I'm going to still count it, John, because my tagline is the Great Geyser Murder Mystery, so I'm counting it. John, your alternate taglines, friend.
Okay, my alternate tagline for Yellowstone is, their love burned hot, but there's... Wait, what does this say? I can't read this. Okay, wait, okay, hang on. Here it is. I got it now. Their love burned hot, but there's nothing more cold-blooded than a geyser.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Blues Brothers tagline. A couple of white guys doing the black thing equals the blues. Okay. And Raise the Red Lantern tagline. And of course you have to display Torgo prominently on this poster. But just Torgo saying, the master will not be pleased.
So would the movie might have been better with Torgo in a cameo. So
Torgo should have been in Raise the Red Lantern. Where was he?
When she's like, you know, demanding a foot massage when it's not her turn, he just pops up. You can't do that. The master will not be pleased. So, okay. Yellowstone, it's only 1 hour. You'll be fine. So that's my tagline.
Okay.
The Blues Brothers, this director hates cop cars. Stay away from the cop cars. And Raise the Red Lantern, ladies, leave your flutes at home. All right. Best opening credits, Melissa.
Well, I'm going to go with Blues Brothers just because I feel like the opening credits were a little strange in Yellowstone. Like, it wasn't...
It was a mess.
I don't know. Yeah, it was sort of disjointed. I don't know how to describe it. So, yeah, I guess I'm going to go with Blues Brothers, but by default more than anything.
Okay. John, what do you think?
Okay, funny, the Blues Brothers, I like the Blues Brothers credits because they mirrored the Blade Runner opening credits with just, like, the dystopia in the sky and everything.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? Did I accidentally put in Blade Runner? No, it's Blues Brothers. But no, actually, I went with Raise the Red Lantern. I really just loved the yellow writing on black, and then it showed Raise the Red Lantern in red on black, and it looked cool. And it had the cool Chinese music.
Yeah. Okay, I ended up going with the Blues Brothers. It starts with the song "She Caught the Katy," but it's got that bam bam, right? And then when Jake and Elwood meet and they hug and it says the Blues Brothers, just in case you were wondering who the Blues Brothers were, it's that.
Yes.
All right, John, best titular line.
Best titular line. Okay, when the police dispatcher says, "Use of unnecessary violence in the apprehension of the Blues Brothers has been approved."
Oh, okay. I think it was Raise the Red Lantern, people. No, that they never said that. But Matt Murphy, speaking to Aretha Franklin, said, "But babes, this is Jake and Elwood, the Blues Brothers."
That is a good one.
All right, Melissa, do you have a favorite technology from these films?
My favorite technology is from Yellowstone. It's when Ruth, that's her name, right? She comes up in her car and Ranger Dick is there taking her name down and his pencil magically doesn't write anything down because it's not even touching the paper. But somehow he has, a list of everybody who's been there, even though it never touches the paper. So that is some great technology right there. So that was my choice.
Why would he not have the pencil touch the paper? Like, what part of acting is like, we only have one sheet of paper for all these takes?
So it didn't even look, it wasn't even like a page, like a proper page. It looked like more like a map. It never touched. I was like, okay. And he never looked what he was writing. So he could have written gibberish. And then not have a proper record. And that's got to be a good rule book.
He's like, oh, no, I did it again. I was writing without looking. I wasn't even touching the paper when I was not looking.
Because he was so in love with her already at first sight that he just, you know, he felt like he was floating and his pencil had to float too.
Okay. All right, John, what's your favorite technology?
Technology? Well, the foot massager in Raise the Red Lantern.
How would you like that, the mini hammer foot massage?
Yeah, it looked like it didn't do anything, honestly, but I assume it worked.
I think it worked because like that seemed to be the driving force behind, I can't believe I don't have a foot massage tonight, right?
They really wanted that foot massage.
That foot massage is worth narking on everyone for that foot massage. So, okay, my favorite technology is the bouncy floors in the church at the Blues Brothers when they've like got a trampoline
they must
right
be on
in
trampoline.
The floor.
Yeah. Doing the high flips above in the church, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Name. John, what's your favorite name from one of these characters?
Favorite name. Okay. Sorry, but honorable mentions to Ruth's horse, Weiser.
That's right.
Spelled O-U-I-S-E-R. I'm wondering if the band Weezer got its name from this movie, Yellowstone, where her horse is named Weiser.
For a certain
Weezer, or Weezer Boudreaux from Steel Magnolias. That's
Weezer. Oh, that's how Weezer's spelled in Steel Magnolias.
I think it's with two S's is the normal.
Look at the
Southern
long
spelling, at least.
The long arm of influence the movie Yellowstone has.
Yeah. Big classic. Spread to Steel Magnolias and then to the most popular band in the world, strangely, Weezer. Honorable mention to Matt Guitar Murphy. I love how his quote name is Guitar. But no, my winner is the guy in the sauna, Mr. Sline.
That sauna is great. That's like, that sauna is like 1,000 square feet.
Yeah.
All right, Melissa, your favorite character name.
So I'm going to go with Elwood Blues only because I first saw this movie when I was a little girl. And I swear to you, for years after, because I didn't watch the movie again for a long time, I thought his name was Elmwood with an M. And so I'm just going to go with it now. This is my little apology to you, you fictional character, that I had your name wrong for like decades.
Elmwood makes sense.
I agree with Elwood Blues. Great name.
Oh, okay. Elwood. Yeah.
So food. Oh, there's so many options. Okay, Melissa, your favorite food from these movies?
Dude, like, in Raise the Red Lantern, there's a lot of talk about food and stuff. And I feel like I kind of get why it was such a big deal to choose the food, because it was like kind of like the lanterns. It was a big part of the tradition of that house. And I hated a lot of the traditions of the house. For some reason, like anytime they even talked about food or showed food, it made me hungry. It really did.
Yeah. Val and I went out for Chinese food. So right, it's fascinating because that very first breakfast, they're like, hey, you're the fourth wife, you can have anything you want. And then they rolled off this menu, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, I would eat all of that right now. And then she's like, bean curd. I would like bean curd. And so you know from that moment why the other sisters or the other wives are just going to totally try and screw her over, because no one wants to eat bean curd for every single meal.
That's true.
Yeah. All right. John, did you say your favorite food?
No, my favorite food is four fried chickens and a Coke.
Oh, yeah. Which is slightly better than dried toast, nothing on it.
Yeah, the dried toast looked gross. Yeah. No, oh, gosh. You have to have butter on dried toast. You may as well have a piece of bread if you're just going to –
John,
you're not going to put butter on the toast.
Once upon a time, I believe you introduced me to a bagel where you first butter it, then cream cheese it.
Yeah.
And my arteries are getting clogged thinking about it, but that's still the best way to eat a bagel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Butter and cream cheese.
Butter and cream cheese.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so the hot pot breakfast looked really good, but I'm going to go with the Old Faithful Lodge Feast because I'm assuming this wasn't a menu. This was the courses. So we have cantaloupe supreme, cream of tomatoes, consomme brunoise, crisp celery, ripe olives, creamed river shrimp. I don't know why you would cream shrimp, but there you go. Potatoes and rice, braised tenderloin beef, a half a spring chicken, country greens, grilled lamb chops, asparagus, hollandaise, head of lettuce, souffle, vanilla cream pie, assorted cakes, dinner rolls, tea, coffee, milk, iced tea. That's a meal.
They stuff all of that into Old Faithful. Old Faithful cooks it and spews it out.
I never mentioned that this movie, like, this movie failed because all the money was stashed in the geyser, and there should have been a shot of the geyser spewing money.
Yes, that would have been, it would have happened in It's a Mad World, but they didn't think of it. That would have been great.
Instantly, that would have been made it my favorite movie of the three, but it didn't happen. Okay, so we're down to outfits. Melissa, John, your turn.
Okay, I think it was wife number three who had the black out floral dress that was just really great.
Yeah. So I love Chinese dresses so much, the formal dresses, and I think I understand the ideas of cultural appropriation, but I love Chinese dresses. I think they're so beautiful. So I wish it was culturally appropriate for all people to wear Chinese gowns, but whatever. So Melissa, do you have a favorite outfit?
Yeah, so there was an outfit, and I'm going with Raise the Red Lantern as well, because I agree with you. They're gorgeous, and it's really too bad that people can't wear, you know, something from another culture and not be called out for something. You know, I think that's terrible. Like, cultural appropriation, I've always felt was like when you profit off of other cultures.
Yeah, or you're mocking.
Without giving them credit. But just wearing, like, you know, if you want to, like, wear some, you know, some like, huaraches or something, you know, like, some kind of, you know, like, if you want to use something from my culture, you know, fine, just don't be an idiot about it. Like, if you want to wear some sombrero, don't do it ironically or be an asshole about it. Just, you know, just wear the damn hat if you want to. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't be like white people on Cinco de Mayo all being racist about it. You know what I mean? But, like, you know, I don't understand calling people out, because there's a difference between appropriation and appreciation.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a difference, but I feel like the lines have all been muddied, which is makes me
sad. I appreciate you saying that, because I've often thought that myself. I think one reason why we stay away is because I think everybody perceives the line in a different place, which I think is unfortunate, but necessary. Yeah.
I feel like I draw it at, is it ceremonial? Am I making fun of your culture? And if it's any of those two things, then I should stay away. Right. But
so
my wife has a blue Chinese dress, which she hasn't worn for quite a while, but, she looks gorgeous in it. And so anyway, whatever. But anyway, your outfit choice, which you were about to reveal.
Oh, okay. So, fourth wife, at one point she wears this black skirt, but with this top that's, you know, the traditional kind of floral pattern that we're used to seeing, with Chinese clothes, old school Chinese clothes, but it's like a grayish color. It's not like the vibrant red you would expect or something. It's like this gray color, almost like it's signaling, you know, because it's, you know, with the dark skirt and the kind of grayish color, it almost signals something, you know, like the change is coming or how stark her life is going to be now. But it was still, she looked like $1 million. She looked like a first wife or something. You know what I mean? She really just looked beautiful in it. And then she went and abused the maid again. And then I was like, but for like a moment, she looked gorgeous, and it would have been nice if, like, the next thing out of her mouth could have been something beautiful, too, instead of, like, abuse.
So Gong Li is really famous in China, and I kind of think that maybe she's, like, their Michelle Pfeiffer. I don't know. I think Asian women are really pretty. I'm not wild about Gong Li, but my dress is also from – dress, okay. My outfit is also from Raise the Red Lantern, and the third wife, whose name is Mei Shan – I think while they're all waiting to see who's going to get the lantern put in front of their homes, she has a light green floral dress that just is just beautiful. Anyway, moving on to your favorite alien. I mean, there's so much room for some great racism here. Go ahead, Melissa. Who's your favorite alien?
I don't have a favorite alien.
It's a tough one. John,
that's the right answer. Okay, first of all, taking a step back, you're not wild about Gong Li. What is wrong with you?
She's gorgeous.
I mean,
dude.
She's pretty, but there's other Chinese. I thought the girl who played Third Wife was significantly prettier than Gong Li. So, whatever.
Nope.
Okay.
It's not a competition.
Okay, sorry.
That's true. It's not a competition.
It's a competition.
We got rid of that. We got rid of that
Gong
category.
Gong Li, you monster.
Yeah.
My favorite alien. Little context here. There's a character in the Geyser movie. I can't remember the character's name, but he's played by Jim Thorpe, and he's the Native American on horseback who warns them of something. Jim Thorpe, of course, you know, the famous football player and literally Native American, you know, in real life. And so, therefore, my favorite alien is everyone in all of these movies except for Jim Thorpe.
Well, yeah, everyone, at least in the first two movies, right? They're all aliens to North America.
That's true. I guess the first two movies. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go with the Illinois Nazi, Mr. Klopek.
He's a weirdo.
He's a weirdo. Okay. Looks like he could be an alien.
Good choice.
Wouldn't that be something if we saw a movie with him in it again in the near future? That'd be something.
As a bad neighbor.
As a bad neighbor.
But is he the bad neighbor? Well,
who's to say? In 2 weeks, we will all say. So anyway. Possibly. Okay, moving on. Best special effects.
Wait, can I just say there's sort of, you said you called him an alien, but there's actually a book. It's called Ring Shout by P. DeGelly Clark. I read it late last year, where KKK are actually monsters that are disguised as humans, and they're purposely sowing racial hate to destroy the earth.
So that's like one of the few things that makes sense, right? Because how do you like?
It's like
just
they live
in your American life, and you're like, you know what? Even though World War II was a really big deal, and we defeated Hitler, maybe being a Nazi is a good thing. Maybe. So I just don't know. Like, who can? It's like, how do you have that wild of a swing? I don't know. So monsters maybe make sense.
It's a really good. It's a good book. It's very short. So, you know, you could read it in an afternoon. It's called Ring Shout.
Ring Shout.
And there's like two. There's the Ku Kluxes, which is the monsters, and then the Klan members who are humans that they've converted to becoming racist. But the head ones are always these monsters, and they're really hard to kill. And there's this group of black people in the South who band together to try and kill them. It's set like 100 years ago, and it's really quite fascinating. It's you know, there's a lot of like metaphors and stuff in it. It's a really good book. So Ring Shout.
John, put it in the notes.
Shout out to Ring Shout.
Ring Shout.
Yeah. So this isn't related at all, but I'm going to pitch the movie idea that came to me yesterday that if one of you guys can get this movie made, a high school film where you have the less popular kids who aren't like the perfect gorgeous teens, right? And whether it's an alien invasion or a virus or whatever, they all wake up the next day and they're just gorgeous. They're beautiful, gorgeous people. And they go to school and they kind of adapt to it. And the people who were popular don't really know how to deal with it. But then here's the twist. In order to stay beautiful, they gotta, drink blood or kill other people. So they just start eating the people who were originally beautiful. But then, and this counts for the faculty too, right? But they get to the point where all the people who were originally beautiful and had it real good, they're all gone. And then in the end scene, they realize that they have to eat each other. And my final shot is a girl coming out of the school door, and she's just soaked in blood, and she's smiling. Anyway, please get that movie made, one of you guys, and I'll share some of the money with you.
On it.
Okay. You can call it... I don't know. I don't have a name for it, but anyway.
Wait a minute. We have to get the movie made, one of us, and then but you get all the money and you'll share it?
No, I said share it. Yeah, I'll share it. Yeah. Hey, it's my idea. So you guys, if you hook me up, I'll give you I'll buy you a Coke.
Okay.
So speaking of best special effects, I think that's what we're on. Melissa, Your favorite special.
Oh, all the geysers, of course.
So it's funny because like the geyser spews and then they show like a wide shot and the giant crowd that was there to watch the geyser is no longer there, right?
The geyser killed more people than we thought.
I know, because like, gather around, everyone, get close. You're going to want to feel it as it's coming up.
Cuts and Nazis melting and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
All right, John, your favorite special effect.
My special effect is in Blues Brothers at the end in the car chase when the car randomly through a series of strange editing does a backflip over the Nazi car, like when it hits reverse and then it's facing the other direction and flips over the car.
Oh, that was 100% my pick for best special effect. I have no idea in like what world that works. How? So, yeah,
in
that
the
was
Blues Brothers world. Yeah.
Yeah, that was something else. Okay. Then John, your favorite location, the place that you would want to be in any of these films.
Okay, I'll say Yellowstone, perhaps specifically the Old Faithful Lodge back when everyone wore a tie to Yellowstone.
Okay, very good. Melissa, your favorite location from these films?
Yellowstone, because I've never been, and I'm a big Kevin Costner fan, so I need to go there.
So Yellowstone really is a beautiful place, and you should.
It's really cool. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to go with the Palace Hotel Ballroom. I just can't even imagine being there for that concert that night.
Oh, at the concert. That'd be fun. Okay. Oh, here's the other thing. Okay. But, I mean, didn't they swindle everybody who attended the concert? They played two freaking songs and then left.
Three. There was three because there was an opening band, right?
Yeah, that was still just the opening band, but the headliners played two songs.
So, but the ticket was $2. You paid $2 to get in. You got to see Cab Calloway and two songs from the Blues Brothers.
Back in 1980, $2 was like $3,000.
Okay. All right. This brings us to your favorite song from these movies, John.
I'm gonna go. Give Me Some Lovin'. They played in the Southern Bar.
That's such a good song, and it got cheated in this movie because they only got to sing like a third of it because the cruddy cowboys, right?
Yeah.
By the way, I do love how if they don't like you, they huck bottles at you, and when they like you, they huck the bottles at you.
So, yeah.
Anyway, all right, Melissa, your favorite song from these movies?
Think by Aretha Franklin.
I almost picked Think.
That was a great performance. Yeah.
That was maybe the performance of the movie as far as the musical numbers go.
Yeah.
I'm glad you picked that. That was my honorable mention. So I'm going with From the Palace Hotel Ballroom, Everybody Needs Somebody to Love. Just wonderful. Showstopper. Okay.
Yeah.
Guest star, Melissa.
What is a guest star?
Someone who I don't know. It's a little nebulous.
I know we discussed this last time, and I'm like, I'm still not sure I'm clear on
it. You can name a person who was in this movie, and it will qualify from one of the films.
It's almost like a wild card. Usually it's someone who doesn't show up
too much. I'm going to go with Aretha again.
That's good.
That's a good one. Good choice. Yeah. John, what do you got?
Okay, my usual criterion for guest star is someone that we haven't seen before. So that's often what I pick, or it's someone who plays themselves or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I instinctively wrote down James Brown, but then I disqualify James Brown because James Brown was in Rocky IV. So I then went to my backup, which is John Candy. I don't think we've seen John Candy yet.
Is
in
it
a year's
possible we haven't had a single John Candy film?
Yeah, I don't think we have.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my That's God! What kind of movie podcast not, is this?
I know it's great. That's why we're only fourth best. Summer rental, yeah.
Okay. My honorable mention is Jim Thorpe, and because I don't follow John's rules, my favorite guest star is the funkiest man alive, the hardest working priest in any church, and that's James Brown.
Wow, we've had a lot of the same ones this time.
Yeah. By the way. You know, we're a few months away, but possibly the greatest Christmas album ever written is James Brown's Funky Christmas.
Right. I gifted that to you.
Yeah,
I copied that for you.
That's the most sincere Christmas album I've ever heard. I love it.
It's great.
Okay. John, your favorite external recurring character, someone from a movie we've podcasted before.
All right. Honorable mention to Frank Oz, who was in the Muppet movie. Honorable mention to Paul Reubens, who was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah. Honorable mention to Carrie Fisher, who was Empire Strikes Back. Honorable mention to Dan Aykroyd, who was in Ghostbusters. But the true winner is Andy Devine, the weird ranger who was in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
Well, that's my pick.
Yeah, I knew it would be.
Melissa, do you have one? Did you bother to do this much research?
No, well, I chose Carrie Fisher only because I would have bet every penny I have in my bank accounts that y'all have done at least one Star Wars movie before.
I think we've done two.
Yeah, so I just went with that, and also because I adore her.
Good bet. We might see her again in the near future. Okay. Internal recurring character. Is there a character or a theme that you connected through these films, Melissa?
I mean, there is a patriarchal bent through all of them. I mean, Yellowstone, just by the era that it was made, and the women, you know, I appreciated that Ruth was like on horseback and went trying to look for her father's killer and was trying to, you know, I kind of appreciated she had a little moxie. They gave her more, sorry, that's my phone. They gave her more agency than I think women back
then.
Are
you okay? It sounds like a lightsaber cut you in half.
Do you know how many rules Ruth broke from the handbook by riding a horse as a woman?
Oh, I know a lot of them. And she wore pants. Oh my God. But you know, you could see the constraints of the patriarchy in the women there. I mean, Razor at Legend, that's all there was. And,
what?
But even in the Blues Brothers, like, even a goddess like Aretha Franklin was, like, made out to be slightly shrewish because she didn't want her husband to go back with the band, which was a good call, by the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you could kind of see that thread through all of them, I think.
All right. Well, John, what do you think? What's your recurring theme, character / whatever?
I did not do a theme. I did a person.
Ooh, there is one?
Okay, I assume you didn't bother to check the IMDb check on this?
I thought it would be impossible. You've got a 1936 movie, a 1980 movie, and a movie with only Chinese actors.
Just only Chinese actors. There's a man named Tom Steele, and he's my new hero. He did stunts for Yellowstone and the Blues Brothers.
Oh, wow.
By my calculations, he was 71 years old when he was doing stunts for the Blues Brothers.
Holy cow. Wow. Okay. Well, I put, for connecting two films, only men are allowed to play musical instruments because I didn't see a single lady playing any instruments in the Blues Brothers.
Oh, yeah. And the one musical instrument owned by a woman was burned.
Burned. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you know what? Even though it wasn't a gift from a male suitor, it would distract her. Would have been a distraction, so you can't have that.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
They should have burnt her master's skin flute, is what they should have burnt.
Oh, I've never heard it called that. I'm glad to be able to add that to my vocabulary. Okay. All right. John, yeah, John, your favorite death. The best death.
Best death. Okay, well, it's got to be Hardigan frozen with his gun by a geyser.
Well, I mean, the Nazis, I feel like we shouldn't cheer when people die. Even like when Osama bin Laden was killed, I'm like, well, we're cheering because someone's dead and if anyone deserved it. But the Nazis, it's always okay for the Nazis to die.
I think I forgot to say this, but that was my honorable mention for best special effect was the falling car.
Oh, yeah.
Nazis in it.
So that's my honorable mention. My favorite death, though, is the of poor Foster being flash frozen, then spewed from a geyser, and then shot and struck on the head.
Make sure he's dead. Make sure the geyser finished the job.
Okay, villain, Melissa.
The geysers, of course.
The geyser is a good villain. John, what do you think?
I want to point out, tagging on to the special effects of the Nazi car falling a mile, it was right after the Blues Brothers car did a backflip over that car. The Nazi car fell off the overpass and falls for a straight minute and then crashes into the ground, and then the Blues Brothers car immediately jumps over the hole. Yeah. So the Blues Brothers car drives faster down the freeway than the Nazi car just falls in the air. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, sorry. My favorite villain. Okay, honorable mentions, the patriarchy is a villain. Honorable mentions, the Illinois Nazis. But the best villain, definitely, the Geyser. The Geyser was just killing everybody.
Yeah. It hadn't been a geyser for 50 years. It hadn't, like, spewed, I guess, right? It had been biding its time.
It's like the geyser waiting. Got a taste for human blood, and then it went nuts.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I have Yellowstone Detective Johnny Hartigan as an honorable mention, than the Nazis. But I'll take this seriously. It's definitely the Master, so not great. And then my hero may be a little controversial, but I it's hard to pick out a hero in any of these films. But I'm going to go with Mei Shan, also known as Third Wife. That kind of tried to pull together some sort of happiness for herself in a really crappy situation. Of course, it didn't work, but what, you know, she tried. Hero John.
Hero, honorable mention to the bottle of epoxy that Dan Aykroyd steals at the beginning of the movie, and then like two-thirds of the way through the movie, it comes in very handy when he epoxies the good old boy's like van pedal. That was just some weird foresight there. I think I'm gonna steal this epoxy right now from my factory. But the real hero is the Blues Brothers band for getting it back together and, you know, doing, you know, playing, you know, the music in the movie.
Because really, a movie like that, the plot of the movie is, what story do we need to write to hear the Blues Brothers perform a half a dozen times? All right, Melissa, who's your hero?
So I think I actually said that the nun from the Blues Brothers was my hero earlier.
Sure.
Because she got to smack them around, but also she's like the only woman in any of these three films who got the upper hand on a man, like at all. And so for that reason alone, she's my hero.
So apparently, IMDb trivia, John Belushi did his own stunt falling down the stairs while still in the desk.
And that was my best death then.
And he John injured Belushi him. Died. He injured himself pretty bad during that. And so, anyway. All right. Movie goof time. Melissa, is there a movie goof that you noticed that we should know about?
I just felt like in Yellowstone, you could see like a lot of backgrounds. You could tell that they were sets in some cases, right? It's pretty obvious. And I think people didn't realize that at the time because they didn't have anything to compare it to. Like, we have all these special effects and all this stuff now. You know, so it's, I think when it happens in older movies, it's more obvious to us. They probably didn't realize it back then. That was just how it was. Like, you watch The Wizard of Oz, you see that crap all the time. You know what I mean? You could tell that, you know, it's supposed to be this wide forest, but it's like 2 feet wide or something. You know what I mean? Like, it, you can tell. But so I don't know if it's a goof exactly, but it's so obvious in some cases how small these sets were. That it almost feels claustrophobic in some ways.
Yeah. All right, John, do you have a movie goof?
Yes. It's also in the movie Yellowstone where it, on one occasion, one of the characters says, "That geyser hasn't erupted since 1909. Like, that's not a way you say dates.
1909.
Yeah. Is he talking about the year 199? Because that's the long record for that geyser.
Okay. I'm going to go with the good old boys showing up 2 hours after the bar closed and, like, being pissed that they don't get to go on.
That's a goof. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that, I mean, that it makes no sense to me because I kept waiting during the performance. Like, the good old boys are going to show up. And anyway, whatever. Funniest moment, John.
Funniest moment. Honorable mention. Melissa's mentioned this several times. I apologize. But honorable mention to the nun hitting them with the switch whenever they swore. And then the vicious cycle of them swearing because they got hit. And then that happening over and over again. But – and this is – okay, my winner is just about the dumbest thing ever. But I think it was when I laughed the hardest, and it was when the SWAT team got out of the van and just kept going, hut, hut.
Oh, no, hut, that's hut, my hut, funniest hut, moment, too. Yeah.
I thought it might be. Oh, my gosh. Why do I laugh so hard at that? It's just so dumb. Just a bunch of guys saying, hut, 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 hut.
Oh, Melissa, what's your favorite?
Yeah, I picked the nun again. I'm telling you, I love her. Yeah.
So I did have an honorable mention where Ruth, like, met her dad, and she's like, Dad, I bought you all the tobacco that is sold in Yellowstone. I've been hoarding it. But like, here's 3,000 pounds of tobacco. All right. We've had our laughs. What's the key of D minor moment? The saddest moment of these movies. And Melissa, go.
I think when they murdered Third Wife.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they didn't even have to show it. That's the thing. Like, you know, when I tell you that I can't appreciate this movie artistically, I mean it. Like, it, the way they did it, because they set it up as like, oh, what happens in that room, you know? And so the whole movie is sort of in the back of your mind. You know something's going to happen in that room by the end of the movie. And when it does, it's just they don't even show it, but you just – your imagination just runs wild. You know what I mean? Like, God, how many ways could they have killed her? And so, yeah, for me, that was it. Especially because I think she was the character who I probably liked the most out of that everybody in that film. And there's really nobody that's likable, but she came closest. You know what I mean? So that made it even worse somehow.
So the movie sets you up to think that maybe Fourth Wife is going to be the one who meets her demise because she starts to have that relationship with the Master's son. And so my key of D minor moment is when Song Lien drunkenly accidentally tells reveals to the second wife that the third wife is having an affair, because you know as soon as she says it, you know exactly what's coming, right? So pretty sad. John, what about you?
Okay, key of D minor is when the fourth one, like all at once, the fourth wife bursts into the servants' quarters, and then we have Lantern Gate immediately followed by Voodoo Gate. Just not a good time. Not a good time for my girl, the servant. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, her name is Yar. Yar.
Yar. I could never. It was in the subtitles. It was spelled in a weird way. Then I'm like, how do you pronounce that? Yeah.
Y-A-N-E-R. They kind of swallow the N. Yar.
Yar. Yar. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, let's see. Song. Okay. I don't know what Song Lien's name would have meant, but it's possible the third wife, Mei Shan, that I'd have to see the characters, but it probably means beautiful mountain. But who knows? Anyway, okay, all right.
Interesting.
So after the saddest moment, what about the what the heck moment? And I've got an honorable mention and a real one, and surprise, they both come from Raise Red Lantern. But John, what's your what the heck moment?
My what the heck moment is, how did a Nazi car get a mile above Chicago?
All right, Melissa, what was your confounding what the heck moment?
I think it was in Raise the Red Lantern when I realized they were never going to show us his face. Like, it somehow, somewhere in the movie, it became obvious they were never going to show us his face. And it doesn't matter. I think that's part of the message. That's a part of the whole thing, is that it doesn't matter what he looks like. It's all patriarchy. But I don't know. For some reason, I guess I wasn't expecting that. And I thought they'd show it, you know, like if somebody got murdered in that room, that it would be him and they'd show it or something. You know what I mean? So at some point I realized they weren't going to. And I was like, what the heck? So
my honorable mention is the haircut. I think you see it coming because she knows about the voodoo doll. But the haircut's pretty bad. But I'm going to go haircut. With I'm going to go with loud opera sex.
Okay.
Pretty crazy. And I think at one point he says, the more you sing, the greater it is. Oh, man. Okay. So anyway, we're going to work on I'm going to buy my wife some opera CDs and see what happens. Anyway, here we go. So, John, your favorite quote.
Quote. Okay. Skipping around here. Okay. When Princess Leia reveals who she is and he's like, oh, but baby, you know, whatever. And then she goes, no, it's too late. I must now kill you and your brother. That's my favorite line.
I'm going to skip this one. And I will probably regret it later because I'll think, right as we're ending the podcast, oh, yeah, but no.
Well, I'll provide one for you. I think your favorite quote is probably, don't you realize that you broke rule 3? You have to kiss the ranger.
Oh,
God.
He didn't say it, but he meant it.
You know me so well, Roy.
He said it with his eyes. Okay, so my favorite quote is from John Candy. Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Orange three whip. Orange whips. So anyway, all right. Favorite scene, Melissa?
So I think all the food scenes from Raising Red Lantern, like every time, like I said, it made me hungry every time I wanted to eat food. But I don't know. Maybe I was just hungry when I watched it. I watched this yesterday, and I watched it after work, and I was so tired. And I worked 14 hours yesterday, and then I watched this movie. So no, don't apologize. This is my fault. Is I've been working a lot, like 12, 14 hour days this week. So I'm like, ugh. And I'm not hungover, by the way. I warned y'all, I might be hungover now. I watched this movie. I drank two beers while I watched this movie, and then I went straight to bed. But yeah, I'm going to say every food scene, basically. And those are the only enjoyable scenes in the whole movie.
So, like, I think the first food scene where he's like, here's what's on the menu, and he's describing the food. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I would like fragrant mushrooms. I would like three colored vegetables and whatever.
And you know, the thing is, like, in American, you only see that in foreign films. American films, we never do like food porny type stuff in our films. You know what I mean? Food's like an afterthought or something in the background. But there's several foreign films where like food is like a big deal. Like, have y'all ever seen like Water for Chocolate?
No.
No.
Oh, that's a great film. And there's a lot of food stuff in there. The book is even better, of course, but the book is almost always better. But they really get into the descriptions of the food, and I really like that.
So I think almost an American film that like focused in on the pleasures and joys of American food almost might get made fun of by other cultures. But I think the closest I've seen is there's an episode in, correct me, John, the third season of Arrested Development, where in Wee Britain, there's the American restaurant, and then they start with, instead of like a plate of nacho chips, it's a plate of donuts, and they're each brought like a 32 ounce big gulp, and that's the beginning of their American meal.
Oh, perfect.
Oh no. Have y'all like, ever done a film called Tampopo?
No.
It's a Japanese film. It's all about food. It's a kind of a weird, it's a little weird. It's a little strange, but I love that film. And they really get into like the minutia of making food. And it's this truck driver. He's like a journeyman truck driver taking stuff all over Japan. And he stops in all these places and like is really into food. Y'all should like, you should do like a food podcast. And then just, that should be one of the featured films for real.
Okay. And we have to, as part of the homework, we'd have to sample the food from the movies. So
yes, right. That's how I'm for that.
So if we watch a French film, John will have to go to the only French restaurant in Utah. I assume that Lakai is still the only French restaurant in Utah.
Well, we have a Mimi's, but that's like, you know, a chain.
Oh, that's a chain. That's
yeah.
Or do you have
it's a good thing this is movies and not TV, because then I would say, you know, you have to do oh, what's that show? We talked about it on our podcast, Hannibal. If you have to sample all the food from Hannibal, you guys are in trouble.
Oh, man.
Like that guy's brain?
Yeah. No, the TV show.
All right.
Because
they eat all the different bodies.
I assumed he also ate brains.
No, there's a great scene where, is it the girl he kidnapped, where she's just sitting calmly at the table and they're enjoying her roasted leg or whatever?
Oh, no, that was Eddie Izzard.
Oh, that's right. That was his leg. That's right, yeah. Okay. All right, friends. My second favorite scene, my honorable mention, is the haunted house at the end of Raise Red Lantern. And, you know, they pull away from the haunted house, and she's just so beautifully framed in the door frames. And it would be a perfect way to end the film, except they have one more scene where she's crazy. But whatever. The best scene
is just to add to her misery and ours, yes.
Yeah, so it's so claustrophobic. It's like you're never getting away. And if you, by the way, if you become a wife here at some point, you're probably gonna go crazy, or you know, end up in the murder room. So, but the best scene is just so joyful and jubilant, and it's the concert at the Palace Hotel ballroom, and it's just so wonderful. And John, did we ask you yours?
No, you didn't.
Oh, I skipped you. I apologize, John. What's your favorite scene?
Thank you. First of all, I have a note here before I forget. It's something that Melissa said a few minutes ago, that the movie is that the book is almost always better than the movie. Do we have as one of our categories a list of the few movies that are considered better than a book as a category?
No, I don't think that's a category, but...
Well, I think maybe that would be a good category, yeah. But we, you know, it'd be obviously just one of those very subjective ones. Like, yeah, people say this movie is actually better. You know, so Blade Runner would be on that, but we've already watched Blade Runner.
So we had that with, like, sequels that were better than the original. I think we kind of objectified it by saying, well, okay, the Rotten Tomatoes ranking has to be better than the original, right? It is going to definitely be more subjective as far as with the book, but that doesn't mean we can't do it.
If we find a good list, then maybe you can just refer to the list. But sorry.
Did y'all's thing go out?
Did you not hear us for a few minutes?
I didn't. I have not heard the last minute or so of conversation.
It was boring and tedious.
It was really boring.
Yeah. So now you have to listen to the podcast when John produces it. Just fast forward to 2 minutes, 2 hours and 33 minutes. So.
The big joke is when I put like a minute and a half of silence right at that point.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, sorry. My scene. I haven't said my scene yet. And this is kind of cheating because it's a big, huge sequence. But again, the movie didn't have to do this, but it's one of the greatest scenes in movie history. And it's just the last half hour of Blues Brothers, the car chase. It's just ridiculous that it exists, but it's just I see a few things better. And gosh, when all those cop cars just roll down the hill over and over again, and it's just like I'm laughing, but also I'm horrified. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's the budget going to be for this movie? It's freaking me out.
$27 million.
Yeah.
Okay, John, swinging back around to you for your favorite actor from these films.
All right. Well, I've mentioned both of them. John Belushi, I have a lot of respect for, but my winner is Gong Lee, and you're a terrible person for hating her as much as you do.
I don't hate her.
And she does that thing where, you know, the camera holds on her face for 30 seconds, and on the 29th second, she cries.
Oh, the calm cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's really good at that. So she was also in Memoirs of a Geisha. She plays kind of an older character. She's a good actress. So, Melissa, then, who's your favorite actor in these films?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Gong Li as well, because even as much as I despise her character and how she treated her maid, she showed so much on her face. And, you know, it's the type of society where women weren't supposed to be emotional or react or, you know what I mean? Like, that would be like a disturbance. That would be against the rules, I'm sure. But she could show so much on her face without saying a word. Yeah. And I'm guessing that's why she's so famous in China. That's why she's considered one of their best, because her face just tells the whole story about what she's thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it's I don't know how the other wives deal with the husband when he's in their quarters, but there's a couple times where she's like downright mad at him and she doesn't hide it. Right. So I don't know. I don't know if that's part of her trying to exert some sort of independence when she basically kicks him out of the room several times. But whatever. She's a great actress. Am I supposed to say actress anymore? She's a great actor. But I'm going to go with Sci-Fei He, who plays Mei Shan, just because I just don't like Gong Li as much as people do. So Third Sister is my favorite actress. Actor. Okay.
She's really good too, though.
Yeah. We're going to go special awards, and we'll come back to unanswered questions. So, best use of its assigned color. Melissa, which movie used its assigned color the best, and in what way?
Well, considering Yellowstone couldn't because it's black and white, I'm just going to go with Raise the Red Lantern. I mean, seeing like all the red lanterns in what was otherwise a gray and kind of drab courtyard, it was pretty stark, I think.
So how amazing was it to see those red lanterns throughout the film and then the lanterns covered in the black cloth, which just, what an image. Anyway, okay, John, best use of assigned color.
Raise the Red Lantern. Yes, the lanterns are red and, you know, they do have meaning and the red looks brilliant. Especially, I just want to point out, because I forgot to mention this earlier, when they're dragging Gong Li away in her drunken stupor and there's snow on the ground, and there's the blueness of the snow contrasted with the redness of the lanterns. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're all in agreement. The Red Lanterns from Raise the Red Lantern wins that. So now, I don't know what this has to do with any of the movies, but of the three primary colors, John, what's your favorite color?
My favorite color is blue, but I wrote it down as best color. I think red won as far as colors go.
Red's the best color?
red's the best color based on these three movies. Yeah.
Okay.
Like red won the three movies.
So the color red in a battle royale against the other three colors, it beat the crap out of blue.
It beat the crap out of it. Okay. It made the other two red, if you know what I mean.
Okay. All right, what do you think, Melissa?
I agree with red. And I it's my favorite color, but also I just look good in it. Like, I got to say, I don't give myself credit or pass up on the back, especially in regards to my appearance very often, but I look good in red.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. All right. So I'm going with blue. And maybe I misinterpreted the the award, but blue's my favorite color of these three, although lately I've been on a big yellow kick, but whatever. Blue. So most colorful movie. It's not Yellowstone. Melissa, what's the most colorful of these three movies?
I mean, I don't think any of them, they all have like a certain color palette. I think maybe the city of Chicago has its own little color palette. I don't know. I don't think any of them is particularly colorful, quite honestly. Some of the language in the Blues Brothers is colorful. Can we go with that?
You can go with that.
That works. Yeah.
What do you got? What do you got, John?
I'll raise the Red Lantern as colorful.
Okay, so the Blues Brothers has a fairly monochromatic feel.
Yeah.
It's a lot of black and white.
It's in a concrete city, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
They have the you know, even though blues is in the title, a lot of the you know, it's black and white of their suits is kind of like the theme.
So, yeah, so I also picked the Raise the Red Lantern. You got the Red Lanterns, but I mean, you have the white snow and you got the stone, which are pretty monochromatic, but you have the beautiful dresses. And I think sometimes the stone, like John mentioned, has like a bluish color to it, which is just hauntingly beautiful. So we are now going to come. This is what we're going to do. I don't know if you did this, Melissa, but we decided to swap the colors and make new movies.
No, I didn't, but that's interesting.
How fun. John, why don't you start with Yellowstone? Do you want to start? Do you want to do this by color or by movie?
Let's do it by color, I guess.
Okay, so what's your blue movie? Tell me about it.
My blue movie is called Bluestone.
Mine too. Okay, but go ahead.
it's like ancient searchers, because you know the theory that the color blue didn't exist?
Oh, yeah.
Like in civilization, you know, until, you know, long after the, you know, Iliad anyway, because, you know, they don't mention blue and everything. So, like, it's a bunch of people searching out the fabled blue stone. And so they go out and they find the blue stone and bring it back to the king or whatever, but they lose like 40 men on the expedition. And like the last shot is like someone saying, "All of this for a rock." Yeah. Cause they're searching for the color blue.
Okay. So similarly, Blue Stone is a jewel heist film with a chimpanzee sidekick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Jewel heist.
Okay. All right, John, what is your red movie?
It's called Red's Brothers.
Okay.
And it's a movie about two brothers who are secretly communists in Oklahoma.
Ooh. So I have the Red Brothers. These are Russian cops who are twins. It's an action film with Dolph Lundgren. It's an action comedy with Dolph Lundgren and Yakov Smirnoff.
Wow. And they're twins.
And they're twins.
Okay, that's great.
Okay, we're both doing Raise the Yellow Lantern. John, what's your Raise the Yellow Lantern?
all three of our movies are exactly the same. We have the same titles. Okay.
You guys have been doing this too long together. That's what's happening here. It's like your periods are sinking and everything. You're seriously.
It's the worst thing about this. This is podcast 95, and I can't stand how much we agree. It's just like, I hate it. Makes me want to scream into the night.
We'll rank the movies and we'll be all over the place, so it's okay.
We might be all over the place, yeah. Raise the Yellow Lantern is a documentary about interrogators, specifically people who were into the lighting of interrogation rooms, like you know, how much like color and like heat lamps or, you know, foot candles, you know, do you put in interrogation, like lanterns that they put in there?
So mine is a romance film about a leper colony, and when you're particularly contagious, you have to raise the yellow lantern outside of your domicile, but there we have our basically like your Romeo and Juliet, who they defy the yellow lantern, and they're because they're love, they get together anyway.
Is there a scene of someone who has leprosy so bad that they can't get the Yellow Lantern raised because they're like, ah,
their arm falls off?
Yeah,
but there's going to be a scene, a touching scene where there's a kiss and someone's part of their lip falls off and the other person like doesn't care. It's like the vomit kiss in Gentleman Broncos.
Stop incepting Gentleman Broncos. We're going to have to watch Gentleman Broncos on the podcast, and that's going to be a rough week.
That's a tough movie. We are done, but let's have some unanswered questions, because I do have a few.
Wait, I thought of one while y'all were
– Yeah, go for it.
Oh, good. Talking. Yeah,
let's okay, hear. So it's called Redstone.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So have y'all ever seen that movie, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so with the stones that's like the MacGuffin or whatever of the movie, like, so when he starts chanting, they turn really bright and they start glowing and they get hot and they run through the bag. So they've got a stone like that, but it's red. And it's just really hot, and the only thing that can control it and cool it off is one of the cold freezy geysers that froze the guy to death.
Yes.
So they spend the entire movie trying to find one of the cold geysers in Yellowstone, and people keep dying because the only way to find out how hot it is, they have to get close to it, and people keep dying, you know, because they get boiled to death. And then finally they find the cold geyser, and they save the Earth from exploding because this stone was going to get too hot.
Oh, well done.
It's like a reverse Mount Doom.
Yeah. I also thought Redstone would be a good title of a drama about a man who's got raging kidney stones.
So. Wow.
Well, okay. So one of my big unanswered questions, and we got to do this kind of quickly because I got to go to a movie. From the Blues Brothers, why did the whole band go to jail?
That was my question. That was my question.
By association.
Like, yeah, they weren't addressed. They weren't anywhere near the Blues Brothers when the Blues Brothers were arrested.
They were criming?
Yeah, my answer is that the Blues Brothers cut a deal.
That's awful.
They're like, well, we're going to cut a deal, and also we want our band in prison with us, otherwise we won't survive. And so they forced the band to go to prison with them.
There's going to be some hard feelings. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Andy Devine's character in Yellowstone at one point says, is that kind of like what it feels like when you come out of chloroform? And I was like, what? I guess in the 30s, people are just chloroforming each other a lot? Chloroforming
everybody, yeah. I guess.
Okay, and I have another Yellowstone question, which is, what is cantaloupe supreme? How do you make cantaloupe supreme? What makes cantaloupe more supreme?
It's just cantaloupe with sour cream on it. Like nachos supreme.
That's nasty. Cantaloupe by itself is nasty. It's one of the only foods on this earth I can't stand. Like, even the smell of it makes me sick. So,
yeah.
Cantaloupe, the only good cantaloupe is one that somebody else ate.
So I don't like cantaloupe, but I love honeydew, and I think those are almost identical fruits.
They taste very similar. I don't like honeydew either.
Some cantaloupe I have noticed, partnering with a person who frequents farmers markets regularly, sometimes cantaloupe is much better than other cantaloupe I've discovered, yeah.
Well, if you say so. All right. John, I've got your sneeze.
Sorry. this is a deadly virus that's being transmitted through Skype.
Mm. Okay,
stay away, f***ers. I've already had COVID. I don't want it again.
By the way, did you leave the F word in the last podcast, and did anyone catch us?
No, I don't think no one caught us anyway. I bleeped out a couple of them, but I may have missed
one. Sorry. Maybe not all of them. I did better this time, okay?
I think you did much better, yeah. No, nice.
Okay. All right, let's rank these movies, okay? So,
wait, I have a question.
I'm sorry.
Okay, in Rays of the Red Lantern, does the Master have a bed of his own?
Ooh, you would think he's got to, right?
There's got to be a night when he's like, I ain't going to mess with those women.
Yeah. I would think he probably does, but we never saw it. We never saw, like, the Master will not be staying anywhere. Raise the Red Lantern over the Master's house, or what?
Just some alone times and dancing with myself time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, much like his face, we never saw the bedroom.
Yeah.
No.
So, and what happens when he develops erectile dysfunction? Is that just the night where all four wives get to visit the death house? There's just no longer a need.
It's like, yeah, no one can know.
Okay. All right. Any more questions?
I don't have one.
Okay. Questions. So, Brooke, you start. Your third favorite. You're not allowed to call it the movie you hate.
You did it. You did it. You called it.
You can't say it's the movie you hate.
You
it's your
doing
third favorite.
So well, Ray.
Yeah.
Ray.
Did I just call you? I did. I called you, Brooke. So in my head, I heard Melissa. I'm sorry. Melissa, my friend whose name I know, your third favorite movie, again, because you can't say you hate it. It's your third favorite. So I'm assuming.
Actually, no. My third favorite is Yellowstone.
Oh. It is Yellowstone.
Yeah.
So your hatred for Yellowstone is.
Yeah, it's not a hatred. It's just not a very good movie.
Yeah.
And it ended rather abruptly, don't you think? Like, it all of a sudden, I was like, wait. That's it. Like, it just, it was so quick. And then it was like all sort of like faux intense. And then all of a sudden it's like a rom-com again, yeah. Like a comedy. You know what I'm saying? Like the tonal shifts were just weird. And it didn't tell much of a story. And
So the director himself says, has said it's one of his least favorite movies that he ever did.
Mm.
So he hated his own movie too. So you're okay. John, what's your number three?
Well, Yellowstone. Yeah.
It's Yellowstone. Okay, we're wrapping back around. So, Melissa, that's your name. I get to enjoy one of these films without having to do so through the lived experiences that you have not enjoyed. So, take that into account. My second favorite movie, and it's not fair. It's not fair because the Blues Brothers and Raise the Red Lantern are such drastically different films.
Yeah.
No, this is the absurdest part of the podcast where it's so hilarious where we work the system so that we watch Raise the Red Lantern and Blues Brothers in the same podcast. And it's like, which one is better? It's like, what?
Yeah.
These are different things.
So, I love the Blues Brothers. I think it's one of the great comedies of all time. And as far as just enjoying the music and every part of it and the chases, and it's my number two. So there's
Blues Brothers
that.
Is. Okay.
Yeah. John, what's your number two?
My number two is Raise the Red Lantern.
All right. Yeah. So you and Melissa are going to be best friends. So
maybe.
Melissa, you can give us
Melissa
your number two and number one.
Blues Brothers, yeah.
I know it would blow your mind if Raise the Red Lantern was my number one, but it's not. It's number two for me. It artistically speaking, you know, like I said, gorgeous, really well done. I understand the metaphors. I understand the fantasy subtext, but it's still very hard to watch just because, like you said, my lived experiences and my continued experiences. And so, it's going to have to go number two.
So, John, then your number one is the Blues Brothers.
It is Blues Brothers.
And mine, because of my male privileges, Raise the Red Lantern.
Great. No,
and
perfect.
Blues Brothers for me because it's just so much fun. It's a ridiculous movie.
Yeah.
And so you just like, don't try to analyze it like we did. Don't just sit back and enjoy the ride and the music especially. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. So I will say in my film class, my senior year, the class is called Film as Art. And this was the movie that I saw where I'm like, oh yes, a film can be a piece of art, right? Like a film can be beautiful, right? And so anyway, and especially
I'm surprised
because
they watched Blues Brothers in that class.
Yeah,
it seems
Blues
like weird.
No, but it's fascinating to me to have a movie that's so beautiful where the content is so ugly, right?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Them's the movies. We ranked them, and I am probably looking at a 10-minute clock here. So let's talk future business. And actually, the good news is this is going to go pretty quickly because bringing back from the very distant past – and Melissa, I'm not saying your name incorrectly. I'm going to say Brooke, and I mean Brooke. Brooke, from the distant past, Brooke, welcome to the podcast for a couple minutes.
Hello. Thank you for having me for
hey,
a
Brooke.
Couple of minutes.
So we're excited, and we're having you on for your second time. I guess technically your third time, but your second go around. And I do want to share with you that after we did the live podcast, my older brother Josh said that you were his favorite. So, yeah. You made a fan, so.
Well, that's good. I was a little afraid I was making only enemies. So.
No, and it is funny because like that night when I went home to my parents' house, my dad was like, who was the girl who was spouting the psychobabble? And my brother Josh said, yeah, she's a psychologist. She knows what she's talking about. So, well, Brooke, you know how this works. You're this time around, you're going to be bringing three movies that you've never seen before. And then just to be clear, 2 weeks after that, you have to watch either body swap movies or Neighbors from Hell, unless there's a crazy turnaround in the next couple of days. We are not watching Tommy Kirk movies.
So, yeah, Brooke, vote for Tommy Kirk movies. Now's your chance. Yeah,
if you do, then you're still going to have to break the tie.
So. Well, let's say that I vote for Tommy Kirk movies unless there's still a tie, and then I'm totally in for Bad Neighbors.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we have that on the record.
The body swap are so good, but
they are. Body swap movies they're all great categories, and I'm very excited. But anyway, all right, Brooke, but before any of that happens, we get to revel in three movies you've never seen before. Yes. So if you're ready, ma'am, it's all yours.
Okay, well, so since the last time I was on, John picked the movies, and they were all pretty female-oriented. I decided to go with like
Thank
a
you.
Total bro fest for this one.
Oh, you're my girl.
Three movies that I haven't seen that, well, one of them I should have seen by now. So I'm going with The Godfather.
Ooh.
I'm going with The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Ooh.
And RRR on Netflix.
Are you just trying to make Andy happy?
That last one was, but I really want to watch it.
Okay.
So. Wow.
So I've only seen The Godfather of those three. So these are mostly new for me too.
We've already watched The Godfather Part 2 right. on the podcast.
I did look to make sure.
Good, good. And I can't wait to see The Godfather so I can finally understand what the heck Godfather Part 2 was even about.
Well, it'll be an interesting discussion because most people think The Godfather Part 2 is better, and I'm not sure I agree.
It's true.
So, have you seen
it? Yeah, I'm not sure I agree.
I've heard that, and I've always meant to watch these, and I thought, what better opportunity to discuss it with people I'd really like to talk about it with.
Ooh,
yeah, this sounds like a great study. I love how you did the theme here, that you went – it was just like, okay, you know, I'm going to – let's take a swim in testosterone here.
That sounds
and
gross.
Find out, you know, what the deal is with us. And, you know, as a man just seeping with testosterone, I hope to guide you through.
It's going to be raining men.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's raining men.
I almost went with Cyrano, but I couldn't lie to you guys. I caved and watched it on the airplane.
Did you like
it? And so – I did.
Oh,
I really did. The last scene is one of the most powerful scenes in musical history, I think, the way that they recorded it. So let's put that out there. It was really well done.
Wow. Okay, well, that's a ringing endorsement. You couldn't even hold off on watching it, and then you still liked it after it was over. Yeah, we thought you were going to go Cyrano, too. I know Katie wants to watch that, so I'm sure I'll watch it later. Okay. Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Has anybody seen that?
I haven't.
I haven't either. And to be fair, I hate him.
Do you? So
really?
Did you like? Wow. Did you see Pig?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen Pig, John?
No, I hear Pig is really good.
Pig's really good.
I'll have to watch it.
Any movie
I am not
where,
a fan of Nicolas Cage at all.
So any movie where someone can deliver the line, "Where's my pig?" And, you know, it's good. But So I kind of have a problem with Nicolas Cage movies too. Like for the most part, they drive me crazy. But then on the other hand, Raising Arizona is one of my favorite comedies of all time.
Right. So he's got a couple of good ones, and the reason I picked this movie was at the airport, and there were these two girls that were talking about it behind me, and they were like, "Ugh, it was just too much, and it was overdone, and they don't even know what they're doing, and blah blah blah." And I was like, "Okay. I will never watch this movie unless I have a reason to." And now I just wanted, because they were so dumb sounding, but I was like.
So like, fine. Even though you dislike Nicolas Cage and you don't like bro movies.
And you don't want to watch
just
this
like,
movie.
These chicks at the airport have to be wrong.
They bothered me so much.
Yeah.
I couldn't live with it. And I was like, well, this is a really good excuse. Although Andy did tell me that if you don't like Nicolas Cage, you probably won't like this movie. But I want to challenge that because he has a couple of good ones. So
right,
I don't
that's
know, maybe
the thing.
We'll all hate it.
I mean, for the same reason you don't like Nicolas Cage, like that's the reason I do like Nicolas Cage, because the couple times, it's like, no, he's great. He's really, really good. But 90% of the time, he's in movies, okay,
that
I'll
aren't.
Be honest, he's in movies kind of like The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Right,
I'm actually very nervous about The Unbearable Weight of Massive.
I really,
you know, because everybody was, you know, just like, it's just because it doesn't seem like it's like critiquing the concept of Nicolas Cage. It seems like it's leaning into the concept of Nicolas Cage as he exists.
Yeah.
And I think John.
And so that's why I'm nervous.
I'm excited to talk about it because John has kind of a Nicolas Cage theory, which is that like. He doesn't like get a script to play a character in the script. The movie people just want someone to be Nicolas Cage, and he does, right? And
right.
If they
want him to be Nicolas Cage and not a character in a character. Script. Yeah.
And so I think John was not a big fan of Colors of the Dark, which was a recent one. I will say Mandy was pretty darn good.
I loved Mandy, except
for Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. I feel that that's how people feel about Ben Affleck as Batman. Like, it's not his fault. He was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know that's a stretch. But
I thought he was okay. Yeah, he's all right.
If I hadn't also watched The Batman on the plane, I probably would have picked it. It turned out to be amazing. I was shocked.
Oh, you liked it. Good. It was an interesting film. I have a small quibble. That like everyone's like, oh, it's not a Batman movie, it's a detective movie, but it seemed like he's a pretty bad detective. And like at the end, it's just like it all would have like come out in the end anyway, and there's not like an enormous amount of legwork that he did to get there. But I only saw it once. I'm just saying that
I felt like it was a really good Batman.
Yeah. So anytime Batman detects anything, it's no longer a Batman movie.
That's right.
Come on.
Well, no, also, everyone was saying like it's a crime noir, right? Like it's.
This is why I hate, you know, people watching movies, and I also hate our podcast because I just think there's just a little too much of it's not this movie, it's this movie, and like. What can every movie only have one genre, only one way to think about it?
That's why how the podcast works.
That's what we're perpetuating.
But I think that's the brilliant thing about the Batman movies is they always change. They're always a little different. Like it's a character that gets to evolve and become something new with the new directors and things. And as I watched this movie, like I was pissed. Like in the first 5 minutes, I sent so many messages through the airplane, like wireless. I was like, this is stupid. He's so broody. Oh, where are we going to get just Twilight the whole time? Like I was so angry.
Yeah.
And about like 20 minutes into it, I was like, I wish I could buy the bit. I'm not quite there yet, but I hope he does something with this. And then by the end of the movie, I was just blown away. Like there wasn't a single shot in that movie that was on accident or out of place. And I felt like the very last scene when he's on the motorcycle and he looks into the rear view mirror, I was like, that is the director 100% calling out every single hater for using him, because that was like the only like Twilight broody shot where he's just like staring at himself.
So I think he does fine. He punches a lot of people's faces in that movie. There's a lot of face punching.
I
love the idea of critiquing face punching. Wait, who are you messaging on the plane? But were you messaging Robert Pattinson about the Batman?
Yes, I was. I was like, listen, stay in your own lane, buddy. No, I was messaging the my podcast friends.
Oh, of course.
I don't know what to call us anymore. But the Kiss Your Franchise Goodbye guys. We have a
Kissies.
Facebook chat called Princess Stockholm where we mock Andy's love of Beauty and the Beast. And so I was messaging the Stockholm group.
That's funny.
So very nice.
It would have been interesting to watch Batman because then I think we'd be pretty close to have covered every single iteration of Batman on this podcast.
Right. There's
so many Batmen in our podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. We've done
pretty much almost
have
all
we done
them,
every yeah. series, including the animated and the old movie, the 60s.
We did the 60s movie, the Tim Burton movies.
Nolan.
We did Nolan. We haven't done like Ben Affleck.
Oh, that's true.
New Batman we haven't done. So this would be a new Batman.
Yeah.
So.
But that's okay because I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
We still get Brofest 2022.
Woo, woo, woo.
Oh, yeah. I'll be right in the mood. September. Yeah, like school is in the air. I'm going to be roided out.
You're going to watch all of them after right immediately after your workout?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Jello shots full of Everclear. Just ready to go.
There, yeah.
All right.
Going to start that up. Okay.
Well, Brooke, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, we are looking forward to it. And this conversation is taking place in the past, so we don't necessarily know who won the voting for the next after that, but probably, I mean, as we're talking, it's probably going to be Neighbors, right?
Neighbors from Hell, yeah. And I have one in mind, but I'm also afraid it's going to win the vote. But I have a second one in mind. But I think I need a third in mind.
I shouldn't bring it up because, as I said, this conversation is in the distant past. Yeah.
If we had to do body swap movies, I also have one definitely in mind. Either one would work out just fine. But Brooke, get watching these movies, and we will see you in a couple weeks.
All right, we'll see you guys soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Brooke.
Thanks, Brooke.
Bye.
Okay. Yeah. This is We played the three movies. Okay. Pre-recorded.
Hey.
Bloop 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 bloop.
To recap, Melissa, in case you fell asleep while Brooke was talking, because I noticed you didn't say anything to her. She has decided that we are watching a testosterone fest, starting with The Godfather, moving into Triple R, and ending with The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
She picked Triple R, Brooke, or Melissa. Brooke picked Triple R, Melissa, which you went on a thing last week.
Want to watch that.
Yeah.
Effing movie. No.
Right.
It's like three hours long.
It's like a prosive movie from hell.
Yeah, it does.
So The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent is a normal length movie, but The Godfather and Triple R are all three. Both of those are over 3 hours. So, that's some work.
I got to start watching right now while we're still talking. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
That's happening.
And then, so hey, now we need to figure out, well, we already know. Okay. So the movie the movie category that we're going to be going with for Brooke's community service, which we're going to have a poll and we'll figure out what movies we're watching, is going to be The Neighbors from Hell. Brooke broke the tie, which is fitting because she's the one that has to do it anyway. So Neighbors from Hell. So start thinking, what you might want to see is the fans. The obvious ones are, start naming some. You've got The Burbs. You've got Rosemary's Baby. Apt Pupil. Arlington Road. What are some others? American Beauty. I feel like I'm forgetting.
Neighbors, starring Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi.
Neighbors. Possibly Jingle All the Way.
Possibly.
There's another Christmas movie, which I hope we don't watch, but Matthew Broderick is in it, and it's about... Is that Jingle All the Way? That's not Jingle All the Way.
It's about
having... with all the lights.
All the lights, yeah.
That was awful.
It was awful. It was really awful. Danny DeVito?
That was The Burbs. The Burbs is terrible.
Oh, ma'am, you're incorrect. But anyway, so...
The Burbs does make me feel weird. It's got a weird tone to it.
Well, I can't wait for you to feel weird.
And you call me ma'am because you couldn't remember if I'm Brooke or Melissa. I understand.
Yeah, one way or another, John, I'm almost positive we're going to be watching The Burbs, so...
It's probably going to happen, Burbs.
Yeah. All right. So that's that. So now we're gearing up for Halloween. Yay! It's the happiest, busiest time of year. And actually, because of when Brooke has her community service podcast, we will be podcasting 4 weeks in a row, which hurts just thinking about it. But we're doing it. So let's get Zoe on from the distant past. It is time to figure out what the next categories we're going to watch are after we're all done with Brooke and her community service. Which is a reminder, Neighbors from Hell. So looking forward to that with Brooke. And here we go. We've got Zoe on the line because what comes up after Brooke is our annual Halloween marathon. 3 straight weeks of Halloween. So it's time. Yeah. So the time has come for us to pick our 2 categories that people are going to vote on. And of course, the rule is you got to bring back your loser from last year. And we could a couple years down the road if you have a loser 3 years in a row. Maybe that we do a Losers Club with Halloween, or I don't know, but it's a thought. So
that's my pick 3 years from now. Losers Club of all the ones that didn't get picked. That's my new pick, including my Losers Club from the previous year. It's funny to us because we're the only ones who know how this works, really.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, we're picking all the categories. Okay, sorry.
We are. And so I'll go first, and then John, then Zoe. How's that sound? And so
– all right.
My loser from last year is horror comedies, which I was really shocked because we ended up watching Dario Argento, which was lovely, but kind of niche-y. But it had enough support. So we did it. So horror comedies is one of my picks. Now my second pick is vampire movies with no Dracula. Dracula-less vampire movies.
Okay. Dracula-less vampires. That's really nice.
Oh my. Seriously?
Yeah.
I am so in love with you, Roy.
Oh, we could watch Salem's Lot, among other films. Yeah.
So we're finally watching Near Dark.
30 Days of Night, Jacob's Wife. There's a handful of good ones. Now that you've heard my two categories, which are the best ever, now, John, you must lead with horror documentaries.
Horror documentaries. Now, I usually am a stickler for, you know, horror doc, but I'm kind of leaving horror documentaries wide open. Like, it can be a documentary about something scary, or it could be a documentary just about, like, a movie or something. Like, for example, there's a movie called The Nightmare, which is a documentary about sleep paralysis where people have interviews of and they have a consistent thing where there's like this stranger standing over them when they're sleep paralyzed and they can't do anything about it. It's a very scary documentary, not based in a movie already.
Yeah, it was creepy.
Yeah. I think I've seen said documentary, but yeah. I understand the concept. So this is very broad.
Right, very broad. But also probably a like more of a selection are all those documentaries about other movies, thinking specifically of like Memory, Origins of Alien, that one movie about specifically about the shower scene in Psycho.
Or Room 237?
Room 237 is what I was just talking
about. 77 Cuts or whatever it's called?
Yeah, yeah, 77
Cuts. Oh, yeah, the Psycho.
But yeah, the Crystal Lake Memories, Not Quite Hollywood, about like Australian like grindhouse horror movies.
Mm. But, Oxploitation.
Oxploitation is the best kind of exploitation.
Oz. Yeah. But Room 237, I think, would be really amazing. Really amazing.
That would be.
Yeah. So I think that would be a great discussion, and I think it'd be all sorts of fun. So anyway, horror documentaries. I thought it would win last year as well. It did not. Okay. The one I'm nominating this year is simply Girl Monsters. So you got female monsters, female antagonists, female Halloween person. So, of course, you know, Devil's Daughter or Dracula's Daughter, right? Dracula's Daughter.
Okay.
Cat people, species, Ringu, the Ringu ghost.
Femalian.
Femalian. Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body.
I think the weird alien in the faculty is a woman. Knight of the Cobra Woman. Innocent Blood. The John Landis vampire movie. I think I mentioned Under the Skin.
A good one.
And, you know, of course, like Blair Witch.
Jacob's Wife.
Which we haven't watched. Yeah.
Or even A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Oh, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
That's a good one.
What
about Alien Resurrection, since Ripley, but in real life, like Sigourney Weaver, was the villain of that whole movie?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I'd be lost. I never saw Alien 3. So, but anyway, there are lots of down-to-earth girl monsters, too. You know, so you pretty much have any witch, you know.
Hey, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
That goes back a little bit. Sorry, we're rewinding a little bit here, but like, so Neighbors from Hell, would you count The House of the Devil as a Neighbors from Hell movie? Because the babysitter babysits for that family.
But, yeah, they're not her neighbor.
Well,
because she drives in from a long way, right?
Is it from a long ways away?
I think she does. Doesn't Greta Gerwig drive her from town?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Whatever.
From town.
It would have been good.
I don't know. We can argue that. But that would be a great. That would be a great,
great
one.
Great one.
It's pre-Halloween.
That's a really good movie.
Wait, I love House
of the Devil.
Yeah.
Wait. So are we watching the Klopex? Is that what we're going to watch?
Well, we'll see. There'll be some voting and there'll be some picking, but I do love the Klopex.
Yeah. Oh, I love that
Satan
dude.
Is good.
House of the Devil
is our pal.
But it is Neighbors from Hell, so we do know that.
Okay, House of the Devil is like that. That's one that I have put into my. So every year I've got about maybe 20 to 30 movies that I have on consistent loop that I'll watch for Halloween. And House of the Devil the past 5 years has been in that loop. I really love that movie.
It's great. Yeah. All right.
Way to go, Ty West.
All right. Well, Zoe, it's you now. And so I think your category from last year, now you've done 80 slashers sequels. But I think last year, the one that wasn't picked, was it 80s Slashers Part 2? Like specifically part two films? Okay.
Specifically part two.
Now, if I remember correctly, the original movie doesn't have to have been in the 80s. It's the part two that has to have been in the 80s.
Correct.
So, therefore, Halloween. Correct.
So, Psycho 2 counts.
Yep, like Halloween 2, okay. Right?
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, I guess you could put that in that, right?
Yeah, or Psycho 2.
Or Psycho... Wait.
Psycho 2.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. That would be good. Let's aim for Psycho 2. I know we want to
eat Halloween 2. That.
All right,
let's do Psycho 2.
All right, so
I want to see it.
What's your second category then?
My second category is Stephen King movies.
Ooh. Oh, of course. Okay.
So
excellent. Maximum Overdrive. Here we go.
I mean, Maximum Overdrive, right? Silver Bullet. You know, any of the It's like Shining, right? Any of that stuff. Any of that. I was like, you know, what would be fun? The other option I had was I really like like United Kingdom specific folk horror. That was that was a category I had considered, but she's like, you know what? I want to watch a bunch of Stephen King movies this year.
Mm. Now, John, this is the weird part, speaking of Stephen King movies, because I swear we've done The Shining for this podcast, but
Also
we haven't.
Also, we haven't done The Shining. Yeah, it came up. You tried to do a recurring character from The Shining on our last podcast, and we had to check the files, and no.
And I was wrong.
No Shining. This year, it would be very convenient for me to watch The Shining, because Katie and I are definitely watching The Shining before we go to The Overlook.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So
wait, hold on. Are you going to Estes Park, like Colorado, for like the legit the Stanley Hotel, or are you going up to like Bend, Oregon?
No, we're going to the Colorado one. Yeah, so the Stanley
Estes one. Park, baby. Dude. Yeah. We stayed in the maids' quarters, and I'm telling you, it is creep. I love it. I love it. And Rocky Mountain National Park is like right there. It's awesome. The Stanley Hotel is awesome. Oh, yes. Man, I would love to go up there for the Overlook Film Festival in May.
Now, just saying, how cool would it be to watch Room 237 and then the next week watch The Shining? So
anyway. It would be amazing.
Is that the order?
We're going to watch these. The order we're going to watch these in is me and then John and then Zoe.
We watched Room 237 before The Shining.
Yeah, last year was John, Zoe, then me, and so we're kind of rotating.
Okay,
all right.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. I don't even care what wins because these are all great categories.
They're all great. Yeah.
The Stanley Hotel, they have a channel and it's 24 hours a day, The Shining. But it's not the Steven Weber Shining that was filmed on location in the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, that's
it. Was the Kubrick classic, which makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Oh, I would suggest watching the Steven Weber Shining, but you know my feelings on made-for-TV movies on the podcast, so I say it's disqualified.
So that's funny, because I do have a category called made-for-TV movies. I'm assuming if that ever wins, then we'll make an exception.
We'll make an exception for that one. Although, okay, wait.
Because I have in mind late 70s, early 80s made-for-TV movies, like the one about the kid who got AIDS.
Yeah, I know you want to watch that. I know
I definitely want to watch that, yeah.
Well, Zoe, I don't know if you want to possibly refine your Stephen King category selection to only Stephen King directed films.
What?
Oh, yeah, the one movie that he directed.
We just watched it three times.
Just watched Maximum Overdrive three times. but the made-for-TV movie stuff, it has to be
Dead Zone.
Theatrically released Stephen King. I should have put that category.
Okay. So
I should have put that category.
Oh, okay.
So no Dead Zone.
That's good.
Yeah. Dead
Zone was theatrical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah.
The Stand? Was The Stand for TV?
Stand was TV.
Yeah.
Okay. Was TV.
And Salem's Lot. Salem's Lot was made for TV, right?
Yes. Yeah, Salem's Lot was TV. Yeah.
Ooh, does that mean that's out as far as a movie, vampire movies without Dracula? Salem's Lot's such a good movie.
I guess it
Which
is.
One? 79 or 2004 Rob Lowe.
They were both made for TV, right?
Yes, they were. Because Salem's Lot, I think the first one was Toby Hooper, right?
Yeah, it was Toby Hooper. I don't know. We might.
Okay, so the asterisk is, if it's a made-for-TV movie but directed by Tobe Hooper, then it's okay.
Maybe it's okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. We'll see. All right. Well, this is so exciting. I can't wait. We're going to have a lot of fun. And that's all there is.
That's all there is. Okay, back to the future.
Well, isn't Zoe a treat? I noticed again, Melissa, you didn't want to say hi. That's fine. but to recap, for me, we are either watching horror comedies or vampire movies without Dracula. John, what were your two categories again?
My two categories were horror documentaries, straight-up documentaries, not mockumentaries, documentaries. Yeah. Girl monsters.
Or girl antagonists, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. I'm excited for both of those. And then Zoe, again, picked 80s slashers part two movies, which is interesting because he's done 80s slasher sequels before, and this is really similar, but it has to be the part two. So,
part two.
Yeah. And then his other category is Stephen King movies. So
yeah.
We will be watching movies from three of those categories.
Of those six.
Yeah. Nine Halloween movies coming up in October. Pretty excited.
Yeah, so Melissa, if you need something to watch, for this Halloween season, we've got a lot. You know, if you want to follow along, that would be super great because we have a lot of those different categories that would be cut.
Yeah, and vote vigorously when we post these polls later in the week.
Yeah. Vote. That'll be great. You know, to get your input on it because we know you like Halloween.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Favorite holiday.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, then.
Cool.
Okay. John and Melissa, this has been a real treat. Melissa, thanks for coming back. Thanks for being such a good sport. Thank you for watching.
Waking up early on this. Yeah.
Two movies that hurt your heart. And
Sorry about Raise the Red Lantern. I told him not to do it.
Yeah, John did mention that. He says, I think she's going to hate this movie. And I was like, really? I think she might. I don't know, but now we know. You're a great sport, Melissa, and we appreciate you doing the work and spending some time with us. And hopefully we can convince you to come back on next year if you forget how bad it was. So
yes.
Yeah, I need to get over my trauma of watching Grey's Right Line first.
When that wears off, give us a call. It'd be great to talk again.
Okay. All right.
All right, folks, thanks. Anything with happy closing remarks?
I'm done here.
Everybody needs somebody to love. You there, Zoe? You're cutting out a little.
Zoe, you're gone. You just got sucked up by some kind of non-Dracula. Okay, better pause for now. Zoe, did you faint?
Brooke, we may need you to do your best Zoe imitation.
I'm so in love with you right now.